News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. U.S. troops backed by helicopter gunships battled with insurgents overnight near the holy Shiite city of Najaf, killing 43 gunmen and destroying an anti-aircraft system belonging to the insurgents. The fighting began Monday night and lasted several hours, a military spokesman said. It came as around 200 U.S. forces made their first deployment inside Najaf, moving into a base that Spanish troops are vacating about 3 miles from holy shrines, near where an anti-American Shiite Muslim cleric is holed up. U.S. commanders have said they will not move against the shrines in order to capture cleric Muqtada al-Sadr, whose armed supporters have launched attacks against the U.S.-led forces. John Kerry, a decorated Navy veteran criticized by Republicans for his anti-war activities during the Vietnam era, lashed out at George W. Bush on Monday for failing to prove whether he fulfilled his commitment to the National Guard during the same period. Conservative critics have questioned whether Kerry deserved his 3 Purple Hearts for battle wounds, an issue the Democratic candidate sought to put to rest last week by releasing his military records. On Sunday, a top Bush advisor criticized Kerry for leading anti-war protests after he returned from the battlefield. Kerry's direct criticism of Bush's guard record reflected an aggressive strategy to challenge the president. It came as Dick Cheney used a speech in Missouri to question Kerry's fitness to be commander-in-chief. A nearly 3-year fight over privacy in White House policymaking is going before the Supreme Court today. Justices will be asked by the Bush administration to let it keep private the records of Vice President Dick Cheney's work on a national energy strategy. The Bush administration finds a last hope in a dispute that began in July 2001 when a government watchdog group sued Cheney over the group's private meetings. The Bush administration has lost 2 rounds in federal court. If the Supreme Court makes it 3, Cheney could have to reveal potentially embarrassing records just in time for the presidential election. More news after this.
Our national parks have always been there for us, standing as silent reminders of who we are and what it means to be an American. They are full of history, of memories, of majesty. But now these great American treasures need our help. I'm Richard Dreyfuss, asking you to help preserve America's national parks. Visit AmericansForNationalParks.org today, because there's just too much to lose.
This is a public service announcement from Americans for National Parks and this radio station.
A Mexican man who got drunk, fell asleep on railroad tracks, and was run over by a train, slept through the entire episode and escaped unharmed, local officials said on Friday. George Lozano Lopez did not regain consciousness until well after paramedics arrived on the scene late Wednesday night. The train's driver spotted Lopez on the tracks and frantically blew the whistle, but was unable to rouse him or stop the train in time. The undercarriage passed within just a few inches of his body, but did not touch him. For Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
If Alan Greenspan was a medical doctor, he'd be considered a dangerous quack, and his license to practice would have been yanked long ago. Instead, he's an economist, the unelected head of America's monetary system, and his quackery is not only tolerated but lauded by the powers that be, who've been using him to bilk the middle class. Greenspan's trail of quackery begins back in 1983, when he chaired a commission that persuaded Congress to raise the Social Security taxes of working folks. This radical surgery was necessary, Allen said, to create a surplus to assure that future retirees would get the benefits they're due. Quack. But instead of locking these surpluses away for future retirees, Greenspan left them open to raids by any president needing a quick pile of cash for a pet political project. The latest to make the raid is George W., who dove headfirst into our Social Security surplus to pull out the billions he needed to pay for his tax giveaways to the rich. Greenspan himself told Congress that such tax cuts were necessary to, believe it or not, prevent the buildup of government surpluses. Even though the bulk of the tax giveaways went to the richest people, Greenspan promised that this would not harm working families counting on their Social Security benefits for their retirement. Quack, quack. Just recently, the quack was back, urgently telling Congress that because of out-of-control budget deficits, Congress must now slash Social Security payouts as soon as possible. He urged that every retiree's benefits be cut and that the retirement age be raised. Quack, quack, quack. In his 20 years of practicing economic voodoo, here's what the mad doctor has achieved. Working people had their Social Security taxes raised so rich people could have their income taxes slashed, which he now says means that working people must have their Social Security payments cut. This is Jim Hightower saying, this quack has done enough harm. It's time to yank his license.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling?
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends. Tom Hartman with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, on terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, beaming around the planet from radiopower.org. We started a book club. I'm not sure you'd call it a book club because it's not one of those things where you buy a book. We put a review on BuzzFlash.com, and of course you can get the book from BuzzFlash or from Amazon or whatever, or in your local bookstore. But I just wanted to every month feature a book. We call it the Independent Thinker Book of the Month, a book that really isn't getting the press attention that I think it deserves, and that helps us to better understand what's going on with the United States and how we got to where we were. And you can find this at BuzzFlash.com, the review for this book, How Democratic is the American Constitution, by Robert Dahl. And it's just an absolutely remarkable book. And in the first part of our first hour here today, we're going to have Dr. Dahl on, and I want to talk with him about this book. It's this just extraordinary book. Dr. Robert Dahl, welcome to the Tom Hartman radio program.
Well, thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
Dr. Dahl is the Sterling Professor Emeritus of Political Science at Yale University and past president of the American Political Science Association, the author of numerous books, including Who Governs, Democracy and Its Critics, and On Democracy, all published by Yale University Press. Is that all accurate? We got that?
That is absolutely correct.
Okay, great. Question number the book, as I've been talking about this book on the air for the last couple of weeks because it's our book for April. And one of the points that I made is that you do just a marvelous job of documenting the process by which the American Constitution was produced. And one of the kind of talking points in America, particularly among conservatives, is that we don't live in a democracy. And some of this kind of tracks back to Newt Gingrich's official word list during the Contract with America time, when he said that republic sounds more like Republican, democracy sounds more like Democrat, let's stop using the word democracy. But on the other hand, some of it tracks back to James Madison and Alexander Hamilton and the Federalist Papers. Give us just a quick thumbnail. Do we live in a democracy or a republic?
Well, we unquestionably live in a democracy by all virtually all modern usage. It's quite true that that Madison defined what he meant by a democracy in the famous Federalist paper as essentially a form of direct democracy, town meeting democracy, the Greek city-state democracy of citizen participation. Even in his own time, that was a fairly arbitrary distinction, though there was a certain interchange of usage between democracy and republic. But after all, when Alexis de Tocqueville came along about 40 years later, he called it what? Democracy in America.
There you go.
And while the term republic remained on as a common usage in the 19th century by presidents in their inaugural addresses, you get a sharp shift towards democracy in the 20th century, including our current president, who in his inaugural address used the word democracy several times. So it's a change. The term, I've gone on too long. I was going to say something about
fine.
The term republic.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah,
there's
this
a divergence here between Europe and the United States. In Europe, the term republic came to mean, and means today, a country without a monarch. But so you have countries like Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Spain, Holland, who were not republics because they have monarchs, but they certainly are democracies.
The United Kingdom.
So those who insist on the term republic, I think, are antiquarians. They're just totally out of date with worldwide and predominantly American usage, and even standard dictionaries. Look up under the Oxford English Dictionary or Webster's, and you'll find it includes representative democracy.
Yeah, I believe it was in your book that I read it, although it may have been somewhere else, that prior to Madison writing his screed in, was it Federalist Number 10? No, it was 30... I don't remember which one it was. Anyway,
Federalist Number 10 was one of the important ones. Yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. where he basically was saying we don't want to have a democracy because the Greek democracy is, you know, everybody's got to show up, you know, 6,000 people necessary for a quorum. We're not. He wasn't recounting all this; it was common knowledge at the time. We don't want to have mob rule. We want to have protection of minorities, and so therefore we're going to create a republic. But that prior to his writing that. In that Federalist issue, the dictionaries of the time defined the two words identically.
There's some very good studies of 18th century usage in the United States which seem to show, or they do show, that the two terms were used somewhat interchangeably. That distinction that Madison used was, in that sense, quite arbitrary and I think ahistorical. Now, if I can just add a brief point here, the problem that Madison and all the framers faced is that they were creating essentially a new kind of political system, namely a representative government, a representative democracy, you might say, on a large scale, and nothing like that had ever existed in the whole history of the world. You had had democracies and republics, but they weren't big representative governments. So they were starting really, if not quite from scratch, with very little in the way of models that they could build the government on. And they were working as architects who had no other buildings that they could look at and say, oh, that's the kind of building we want to imitate.
Right. And thus some of the what you might call flaws in the Constitution, for example, the Electoral College or some of the compromises, the bicameral legislature with the Senate, causing small states to have disproportionate power in the democracy, as it were, that came out of that a lot of other countries have not adopted. That many other according to your book, our Constitution is absolutely unique. No other country has looked at our Constitution and said, let's do it like America did.
Well, that's right, and that is particularly true of what I would call the older and mature democracies, those in which the institutions have been in existence for 50 years or more. And none of them has adopted the American system. They rejected it as they began to democratize. Whether from a pre-existing parliamentary oligarchy or aristocracy to a more democratic system or not, or whatever, they found the American constitutional system not one they wanted to imitate. Most of them, of course, of those The older democracies, or the mature democracies, not many of the newer ones.
Yeah.
And most of them didn't even go for a presidential system. They went for a parliamentary system, almost.
Right. And proportional representation, which...
And proportional representation, yeah.
Right, which wasn't invented until 1861, John Stuart Mill?
Yeah, uh-huh, yeah. It was Mill who at least, at the very least, if he didn't invent it, he certainly was the one to call it to public attention.
Yeah, popularized it. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number, and I know some of our listeners have gone out and bought your book and have some questions about it. Patrick in New Jersey is on the line. He's just called in. Patrick, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You're on with Dr. Robert Dahl.
Thank you very much, Tom. Excellent program as usual. I'm so glad you have this guest on, because I just found the book last week, and it's very interesting. Now, I'd like to throw out... some comment and get Mr. Dahl, Professor Dahl, I think it is, to respond.
Well, we just lost him. Louise, if you can...
Lost him. Yeah. Oh, can I say it anyway? Maybe when you get him back?
Louise, okay. If you can redial Dr. Dahl on line 3, please.
Well, what I found so interesting in the book is he compares the U.S. with other democratic countries.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that very useful. And what I've always said is that, and I'd love to get him to respond if he can when you get him back, is that the U.S. was really very, very reluctant and hesitant about its democracy. It was much more a plutocracy, I would say, because it had all the property requirements for voting. It had no direct election of the high officials and senators. It had the, various other election procedures that were meant to sort of keep democracy down. It was a great fear of democracy. And I've always said that it was very plutocratic and gradually became a little more democratic over time, only in 1965, for instance, reaching full democracy on paper. It's never really been fulfilled in reality, but at least on paper, in 1965, with the Voting Rights Act, it became more like a real democracy. So we're very late in the game, and we're far behind most of the European countries in how they've become much more democratic than we are with their proportional representation and their open election systems and so forth.
Yeah, it's interesting. New Zealand actually enfranchised women to vote back in the late 19th century. We think that the first nation to do so was the United States and then England in the 1920 and then shortly thereafter in the UK.
Many people here have this mythology that we're the best democracy, and I always have, whenever that comes up in a discussion, I tell them, no, actually we're the least democratic of all the Western European countries. Our election systems are very, very restrictive. We have no real opposing parties. We have this electoral college is very undemocratic. All kinds of things. Voting rights were not really existing until 1965 for everyone. So U.S. people need to be disabused of this myth that we're such a great democracy. It's not. It was always plutocracy.
Well, I would disagree with that. I would say that, it was the best they could do.
Yeah, in 1790, it was definitely a big advance.
It was pretty radical. I mean, it was pretty extraordinary.
We need to go forward from 1790.
Yeah, and that's one of the points that Dr. Dahl makes in his book is that we can go forward, and in fact we have.
Yeah.
We've amended this document many times.
Small improvements. A lot needs to be done. We can't be stuck in 1790 nonsense.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Patrick.
I appreciate it.
We've been unable to get Dr. Dahl back on the phone. Louise keeps redialing him. I'm not sure what happened.
I hope you do.
Maybe John Ashcroft got to our phone lines or something.
Hope not.
Anyhow.
All right, good luck, Tom.
Okay.
Thanks again for your show.
Thanks for the call, Patrick. Our book, How Democratic is the American Constitution? We'll come back to this a little later on. I mean, we're going to get Dr. Dahl on during the next break. And we've got some interesting things here as time goes on. John Kerry gave a speech yesterday in Washington, D.C., and remarks to the American Society of Newspaper Editors 2004 convention. And he proposed a new contract, not on America, and I like Newt Gingrich's, but a contract with America's middle class. I thought this was interesting. And he laid out some specific points. What I found interesting was, number one, that he did this, that he gave this speech and that he laid this out. And I remember when Newt came out with his contract on America, or contract with America, I called it the contract on America. And it got incredible publicity. And John Kerry does the same. And maybe I'm just not watching the right news shows, but I didn't see anything about this. And his contract has these specific points. And first of all, he goes back and he says, you know, 10 years ago, the Republicans introduced what they called a contract with America. They say the contract was written to give the American people more faith and trust in their government, but it did the opposite. He said that wasn't a contract with America. It was a contract against our values and our way of life. Remarkable. You know, just let's go back, tell the truth, talk about what happened. We'll get into that in a little more detail as the program goes on. Lots of interesting things in the news today. A Barbie doll story of all things. This is the Tom Hartman radio program, 20 minutes past the hour. Stick around. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Hallowell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
The war they are in has been declared over by the same man who lied them into it. Their reward? Combat pay cut in half. $1.5 billion cut to their family housing. $20 billion cut to military health care. No health care for reservists.
My answer is bring them on.
Thousands wounded, hundreds dead, and no end in sight. If we support our troops, why can't Bush? Or is this what they mean when they say an army of one?
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
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 Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh?
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he a guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the...
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
the Tom Hartman radio program. 24 minutes past the hour. We have Dr. Dahl back on the line. Dr. Robert Dahl, the author of How Democratic is the American Constitution? This time we've got our buttons working and everything's all lit up. Are you there, sir?
I am here.
Okay, great.
We were cut off.
I'm very sorry for that. Page 34 of your book, there's a great quote from Federalist Number 10 by James Madison, and I just wanted to get your take on this. Madison says, establishing political equality among all, by withholding unnecessary, and you have that italicized, opportunities from a few to increase the inequality of property by an immoderate and especially unmerited accumulation of riches, by the silent operation of the laws, which without violating the rights of property, reduce extreme wealth toward the state of mediocrity and raise extreme indigence toward a state of comfort. Was this a statement of some sort of what might be modernly called progressive or liberal values?
Well, it was. One of the things that is not well understood is that Madison, as he gained more experience with the operation of these brand new institutions that he helped to create, and helped to organize a majority in a political party to fight against what he regarded as the enemy faction, namely the Federalist, he began to espouse more and more what we would call today democratic views, and I think that was one of them. I think they were always latent, so to speak, but it was only as he gained confidence in the qualities of the American people and the majority, or at least of those who were entitled to participate,
yeah.
He began to have more and more confidence, it seems, in the ordinary people and their capacities for self-government. And his views began to change.
Yeah, as Jefferson had right from the get-go, and as Adams really kind of never did. I mean, in one of Adams' last letters to Jefferson, he basically says democracy will self-destruct. Hamilton, you know, but it seems that we had this dichotomy of what today would be called liberal and conservative back in 1787.
Well, we do indeed. There were those who, in 1787, and like Madison, even more later on. There were, right at the Constitutional Convention, those who had much greater confidence in popular government, government by the people, and those who were very suspicious of it. There were even some, like Gouverneur Morris of Pennsylvania, who originally had searched for something like the House of Lords for the Senate, and it was only when they began to talk about the concrete details and they began to realize that there wasn't really anybody that you could agree on was the American aristocracy that they gave up that notion.
Right.
But there were at least those two factions, those who were,
yeah,
who were very suspicious and those who were only slightly suspicious.
And you had Madison and Jefferson repeatedly being very suspicious of the very rich, as it were, or of the possibility. Jefferson at one point was quoted as saying that the accumulation of wealth could be a threat to democracy, the unlimited accumulation of wealth.
Well, that's right. One of the big changes I think that occurred in people like Madison and less so in Jefferson, he was already there, in Madison was that he began to realize that the threat from a propertyless majority, which had worried him and others in the Constitutional Convention, would be solved if you had a propertied majority. And thus how important it was that people owned property, mainly agricultural property.
Which was like the middle class. I mean, it was, let's have a middle class.
Exactly,
yeah.
So.
Yeah, the importance
exactly
of
so,
the importance of
in the property middle class.
Yeah, the importance of a middle class for democracy. Dr. Dahl, we have to take a break for a minute. Can you stick around for another 5 minutes or so?
Sure, I'll be here.
That would be great if you can. We did get interrupted there, and I have a couple more questions that I want to get to. This is the Tom Hartman radio program. 29 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with Dr. Robert Dahl, author of How Democratic is the American Constitution? An extraordinary book. I recommend you go out and buy it right now. Stick around. We'll be right back.
For 35 years, John Kerry's fought for his country.
We need to get some things done in this country. Affordable health care, rolling back tax cuts for the wealthy, really investing in our kids. That's why I'm running for president.
John Kerry, the military experience to defend America. A new plan to create jobs and put our economy back on track.
I'm John Kerry, and I approve this message because it's time to put opportunity in the hands of all Americans.
John Kerry, a new direction for
pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. Unable to get all of the countries of Latin America to sign on to the Free Trade Area of the Americas, or FTAA, proposal, the Bush administration has been approaching countries individually, offering World Bank loans and other economic incentives to developing countries in order to win acceptance for privatization and the weakening of laws protecting public health and safety. The latest country targeted is Panama, and negotiations with Colombia are set to begin next month.
2 weeks remain before some 100,000 service and support workers with SBC Communications hit the picket lines, and signs point to the company and Communications Workers of America preparing for the worst. The contract between SBC and the CWA expired last month, and federal mediation has not gotten the two any closer to agreement on rules protecting jobs from outsourcing and affordable health coverage. The union's arguing its side via advertisements on radio stations and in newspapers around the country. On the other hand, SBC is training non-union staff to handle maintenance and repair jobs. Billing managers are in crash courses on line installation and warns 12-hour shifts, including weekends, will be the rule in the event of a walkout.
Could the graveyard shift be coming to German retail workers? With the German economy suffering from years of stagnation and high unemployment, Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder hopes to boost spending and employment by allowing stores to stay open 24 hours a day. A similar move last year, extending Saturday store hours, didn't show a marked increase in sales, and German labor unions are opposing the changes because they said last year's extension of store hours actually eliminated jobs by further squeezing profits at smaller shops located outside city centers.
Trading provisions involving workers' rights in Europe in order to find consensus on a continental constitution. The United Kingdom says it won't sign one unless it gets an exemption from the European Union's Working Time Directive, which caps the work week at 48 hours. Germany has now agreed to support British amnesty on this issue, so long as the British back a German push for stronger regulations dealing with corporate social responsibility. Whether the rest of the Union will consent to this deal remains to be seen, but Germany and the UK do represent the two largest economies in Europe.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to new research conducted by the Center for Women in Work at Rutgers University, wage depression will continue to create a downward economic trend unless Congress makes policy changes promoting prosperity. Researchers found that high wages and good benefits support a middle-class lifestyle and the ability to purchase consumer goods. The researchers suggest raising the federal minimum wage above the current $5.15 per hour as a start in getting the economy back on track.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 27 minutes before the hour, we're talking to Dr. Robert A. Dahl, author of How Democratic is the American Constitution? Dr. Dahl, the last question here, and thank you for sticking with us on this. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
The right of suffrage was an important one, and you talk about it on page 35 here. The right of suffrage is the fundamental article in Republican constitutions, James Madison wrote, and in his later years, actually. And at the same time, we have this interesting court case, Bush v. Gore, where George Bush sued Al Gore to stop the vote count in Florida in 2000. And I don't recall if it was Scalia or Rehnquist, but one of the authors of the main opinion said, we can find in the Constitution no I forget the exact phrasing, but no evidence of an explicit right of the people to vote for president of the United States. In other words, the people don't have the right to vote. And this goes back to the Electoral College. Why the Electoral College? What brought about the Electoral College?
The theory that, as far as one can make out from the documents about the Constitution, the theory was that they had a terrible time, incidentally, in deciding how the chief executive should be chosen. In some sense, the Electoral College was a last-minute solution. But the idea was, at least in part, that you would have in the Electoral College a group of men, and they would, of course, in that time, all be men, who were senior statesmen who would use their better judgment and their wisdom in order to choose the president. And, of course, within 12 years, that was just shot right off the table. I mean, in the election of 1800, its defects showed up, and what it turned into, as we have seen ever since, is simply a way of counting votes. It's nothing more than that.
Yeah.
And that whole idea of a group of statesmen who would get together and choose the president turned out to be totally unworkable.
But it's going to require a constitutional amendment to get rid of it, and that's pretty unlikely, don't you think?
That's very unlikely because of the distortion in the voting of the small states, the extra votes, in the sense that they get because of it. I think anything of that kind can be torpedoed. Somebody's calculated there have been, this seems an exaggerated number to me, but at least one writer said there have been something like 600 attempts to alter it. All of them failed, because in the end, it only takes a tiny number, a part of the population located in one-third of the states plus one, in order to prevent a constitutional amendment.
Right, yeah. Remarkable. Well, one very quick last question. Yep. I know you note in the book, and at some detail, the charts and graphs in the end are just extraordinary, about other countries, comparing democracy in America to other countries, and how democratic are we compared to some of the other democracies. What do you think are the main points that we as citizens should be looking at and encouraging our elected officials to change? You know, what are the changes that we can make to make America a more democratic nation?
I think the big one, and it's been on the agenda, and it's very difficult to make substantial changes, but the big one, I think, is the influence of wealth and money in the political life. And that we've got to confront more directly. If I may just say one word about that. We think of rights, but rights are ineffective unless you have the opportunity to exercise the rights. They're meaningless. But you not only need the opportunity to exercise, you need the resources in order to be able to exercise those rights. We haven't even begun to think in terms of how we can get the resources into people's hands so they can exercise their rights and make them meaningful. And so it's a way we've got to think about that, of providing for political purposes, not for other purposes, but ensuring that people have the kinds of resources that they need in order to be effective in their voting and their political life. That's a big challenge.
It is. And if public funding of elections, or putting
something of that,
or capping it like they do in England, you can only spend £100,000 to run for the House of Commons.
You can think of ceilings, you can think of floors, and you can think of public subsidy of elections.
Yeah, great. Dr. Robert Dahl, today, if to our listeners, if you want to find a review of the book that Tim King and I wrote, it's on BuzzFlash.com. You can order the book there. You can order the book anywhere, any bookstore, you can find it. Dr. Robert A. Dahl, How Democratic is the American Constitution? Dr. Dahl, thank you very much for being with us today.
Well, you're quite welcome, and good luck.
Thank you. Yep. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, and moving along here, speaking of keeping things, see, this quote, by the way, our quote for the day, I just want to share with you, from Samuel Adams, our quote for the day: if ever time should come when vain and aspiring men shall possess the highest seats in government, our country will stand in need of its experienced patriots to prevent its ruin. Samuel Adams, 1777. But this James Madison, Federalist number 10, by withholding unnecessary opportunities from a few to increase the inequality of property by an immoderate and especially unmerited accumulation of riches, He's talking basically about things like the inheritance tax. And by the silent operation of the laws, which without violating the rights of property, reduce extreme wealth toward a state of mediocrity and raise extreme indigence toward a state of comfort. Isn't it fascinating? James Madison would have written that in 1787. Well, another interesting story. Louise, I believe you have the paper with you. That has come across. Before we move along to that. For fiscal years 2000... I don't have it. Okay. For fiscal years 2002 to 2004... State governments filed approximately $200 billion filled approximately $200 billion in budget gaps by raising state taxes and fees and by cutting services. During those years, newly enacted federal tax cuts delivered about as much money, $197.3 billion, in new tax breaks for the wealthiest 1% of Americans, households making more than $337,000 a year. The report's authors, this is a report from United for a Fair Economy, called Shifty Tax Cuts, How They Move the Tax Burden Off the Rich, Not to Everybody Else, said had that money instead been directed to state fiscal aid, it could have prevented virtually all recent tax hikes and service cuts at the state level, which fall hardest on low and middle income Americans. The choice to send nearly $200 billion to the top 1% rather than to state governments underscores just the way the federal tax cuts of 2001 and 2003 are actually tax shifts, not tax cuts for the vast majority of Americans. Between 2000 and 2003, the United States saw a federal to state tax shift of historic magnitude. Well, you know, I can't find the paper, but put him on the air. Here we go. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, and I had a note about this extraordinary story that ran in your newspaper, and I don't have it in front of me. I'm sorry, so I don't have your name or your newspaper. Could you tell me, please? Our guest.
Yes, my name is J.J. Kindred, and I write for the Mountain Press in Sevier County, Tennessee.
J.J., that's right. I'm so sorry. Vanished off my desk here. J.J., you got to tell us about this amazing story. Here we had, from what I hear, we had a company that gave its workers a severance package that included three Barbie dolls?
Yes, that's true. Actually, the employees claimed that it was part of the severance package, but some of the employees that had been there longer actually got stuff that was more advanced. But
you mean like a Walmart coupon or something?
Yeah, actually, those Walmart gift cards were given as part of a... I think it was a Christmas party or some sort of party that they had.
I see.
But apparently these Barbie dolls were left over from a Toys for Tots campaign that the Dan River Company had, which was the company that actually gave out these Barbie dolls. And they just had a bunch of them left over. And when they went through the period last year where they had to lay off all these employees, they went on and gave them these dolls as kind of like a parting gift, so to speak.
Yeah, this is. I can just, you know, you can just imagine the employees, you know, being brought in. Well, guys, you've done a great job, but we're going to have to lay some of you off here. We're moving offshore. We're doing whatever we're doing. You know, business is bad. So to soften the blow, here's three Barbie dolls. And your paper broke the story. What did you think of this when you first heard this?
Well, I mean, I thought this was unbelievable. There were a lot of the employees that talked to me anonymously and said they couldn't believe they had been treated this way. A lot of those employees had been there for 10, 15, 20 years, and a lot of them felt that it was kind of a slap in the face to them. You know, it was kind of like saying, okay, you know, you've worked for us for 20, 30 plus years. Here's a ham sandwich, a pat in the back, and thank you very much for working for us.
And three Barbie dolls!
That too.
And they were all redheaded Barbie dolls, weren't they?
Yeah, they're all redheaded.
Strange.
And one of the employees came in anonymously showed me all the Barbie dolls and all the stuff they had, which also included a hat and a plaque and a calculator.
Yeah, the wonders, the extraordinary generosity of corporate America. Has the Dan River Company cleaned this up at all? You know, this has to have been a little bit of a PR nightmare for them.
Well, actually, it has. We've tried to get in touch with their employees locally several times, but none of them would return our calls, so I had to go to the corporate headquarters in Denver, Virginia, and get the Vice President of Human Resources to explain, you know, why this was. And he didn't really, he was actually kind of reluctant to answer me, and he got a little emotional saying, you know, that the management staff was the best that they had, and you know they said that they treated their employees fairly.
Okay.
And I was kind of scratching my head at all this, and I was just wondering how come the local people wouldn't answer our questions. I guess they're getting the people at the corporate headquarters to do the dirty work for them, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. Remarkable. Well, JJ, thanks for coming on the program and sharing this story with us. The Rocky Mountain News, was it?
No, the Mountain Press.
The Mountain Press. I'm sorry. Thank you very much. And what city is that in?
It's in Sevierville, Tennessee.
Great. JJ, thank you very much for being on our program.
Okay, thank you.
I appreciate it. Thanks. It's the Tom Hartman program, and now in the midst of this, while employers are laying off their employees and giving them Barbie dolls, between 2000 and 2003, the United States saw a federal estate tax shift of historic magnitude. The share of the tax, total tax burden borne at the state and local level. Now get this,
the official word from on high is we are reducing your federal taxes. Isn't that wonderful?
Well, they're not pointing out, and Howard Dean was saying this over and over and over again, and I don't think the media ever really got it. What Howard Dean was pointing out is that state and local taxes, the tax burden borne by state and local governments, has increased in the 3 years of the Bush administration by 15%. Here's a quote from the report. This is the largest shift in the tax burden since the period of 1947 and 1950. The shift is making the tax system more regressive. Amazingly, in 2002, Americans in the bottom 20% of households paid 11.4% of their income in state and local taxes, while those in the top 1% paid only 5.2% of their income in state and local taxes, less than half the rate of the poorest fifth. The working poor, who yesterday we were documenting how they're lining up at the soup kitchens, and they have to do it at odd hours so that they can get to their job at Walmart or whatever. Since 1962, the share of total federal tax receipts collected from the payroll tax, which only hits people who make less than $87,000 a year, has risen from 17% of total receipts to 40%, an increase of 135%. Meanwhile, the total share supplied by the income and corporate taxes have dropped from 63% down to 52%, a decline of 17%. The less money you make over the last 3 years under the policies of this administration, the less money you make, if you make less than $80,000, if you make less than $50,000, if you make less than $30,000, As you go down that scale, the total amount of taxes that you are paying, when you include payroll taxes and state and local taxes, has been increasing. Whereas if you make more than $200,000 a year, you're no longer paying the payroll tax. And your share of state and local taxes has decreased, but you're paying about one half of what the working poor are paying. Since 1962, the share of federal revenues contributed by corporations has dropped by two-thirds. Two-thirds. Since Jack Kennedy was president, corporations are paying two-thirds less now into the pot. And yet they're still using the commons. They're still using all this stuff around it. Corporations, they want an educated workforce. They want to have the roads so that they can, you know, people can drive to work and so they can transport their products. They want to have, you know, rights of way, telephone systems, infrastructure. Yeah, well, telephone systems are owned by private corporate. Yes, but they run on public rights of way. Just the other day out in front of our house here, there was the guy from the city going through cutting the, you know, trimming the trees that were hanging over the telephone lines. Public rights of way, paid for by you and me. That's why these things used to be called public utilities. And so anyhow, corporations say we want a court system that we can use to enforce contracts and do business. We would like to have
a penal system so that if somebody rips us off, we can toss them in jail. If somebody steals from us, we would like to have a police department protecting us. We'd like to have a fire department in case our corporation catches on fire. But we don't want to pay for it. Does this sound familiar? Does this sound like the rantings of the conservative, you know, your basic average conservative talk show host and politician? Well, it is. Current tax policies are fueling the national debt, imposing an average of $13,000 in additional debt on each man, woman, and child in America. More than $52,000 in added debt per family of four. Time to change things in America. Change coming up in November. It's Tom Hartman, 10 minutes before the hour.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value. Absolutely free, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Officials in Georgia engage public opinion about water to plan for the state's future. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Georgia's population doubled over the last 40 years, and it's expected to double again between now and 2030. That high growth rate is prompting state officials to take stock of the demand they'll face in the future for water. Bob Kerr is leading that effort for the Georgia Department of Natural Resources. He says there will be tremendous demand for water in the state's capital of Atlanta. It's by far the largest city in Georgia, but Kerr says it takes all of its water from a few small rivers, and that supply of fresh water might soon fall short of its needs.
We forecasted that without tapping additional sources or creating additional reservoirs for storage, it would be difficult to take care of Atlanta's growth after about the year 2030 or so.
Last year, the state conducted a survey of Georgia residents to understand their attitudes toward water. Kerr says the results are encouraging. Most Georgia residents say they support water conservation, and Kerr plans to use that information to develop a conservation program with a consistent message.
What we hope to do through development of a conservation program is to, without raising any kind of major concern or panic, because there isn't any need for that, to make them aware that it is important to conserve water for any number of reasons, and give them a lot of ways in which they personally can make a difference in reducing the amount of water used.
Kerr says people can conserve water by installing water-saving showerheads and toilets and by watering lawns only when needed. According to the Georgia survey, many of the state's residents are willing to take measures like these. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Enron, Halliburton, gasoline, and kilowatts, pipeline through Afghanistan.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman. If you don't believe that this is the most important election in our lifetime, said John Kerry yesterday, then all you have to do is look at your front pages. We see the haunting images of our soldiers loading flag-draped coffins. Well, no, I mean, we are now, but boy, they sure didn't want us to for a long time. If you don't believe that this election is the most important in your lifetime, then all you have to do is look at the stories about the millions of middle-class families who are struggling to get ahead. There are record bank bankruptcies, record foreclosure rates, and Americans owe more than $750 billion in credit card debt. Last year, the cost of tuition has soared. 220,000 young people had to give up their dream of a better future. These are the men and women who built America. They worked hard. They contribute week after week. And in return, they're told by this administration, you're on your own. My friends, fundamental fairness is at stake in this election. Have you heard the ad that MoveOn.org has just put together? They're on their website, MoveOn.org. They're soliciting funds to put this into more and more markets. And let me just play this for you. This is an excellent little spot.
It is said of war that it sometimes brings out the best in a man, and sometimes the very worst. Two men, the first went to Vietnam, a lieutenant, in a boat riding up the Mekong River. An ambush, nowhere to hide, a harrowing escape. Then the more harrowing realization that one man was left, wounded in the water. The lieutenant chose to go back through the gunfire because he couldn't leave even one man behind. The second man sailed to the top of a list on his father's name, was trained as a pilot, but failed to show up for a required physical. He was grounded, wasn't seen for months, and then was released 8 months early to go to Harvard Business School. This election is about character. It's between John Kerry, who left no man behind, and George Bush, who simply left.
Who simply left. This MoveOn.org's new ad. And John Kerry yesterday said he's calling for a new contract with America's middle class. Today I am introducing my contract with America's middle class. And he talks about the priorities. The first priority, keeping the country safe and secure. The second contract with the middle class, I will put the economy and government back in line with our values. And he talks about Franklin Roosevelt. You know, I want to get into this in some more detail a little later on the program about how so many people are saying, so many liberals are saying, well, you know, John Kerry's kind of selling out, he's moving to the center. Remember what George Bush did before 2000. Moved to the center, said, oh, I'm compassionate, don't worry. And then he became president. And he was what we all knew he was. Let's hope the same happens with John Kerry. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. U.S. troops backed by helicopter gunships battled with insurgents overnight near the holy Shiite city of Najaf, killing 43 gunmen and destroying an anti-aircraft system belonging to the insurgents. The fighting began Monday night and lasted several hours, a military spokesman said. It came as around 200 U.S. forces made their first deployment inside Najaf, moving into a base that Spanish troops are vacating about 3 miles from holy shrines, near where an anti-American Shiite Muslim cleric is holed up. U.S. commanders have said they will not move against the shrines in order to capture cleric Muqtada al-Sadr, whose armed supporters have launched attacks against the U.S.-led forces. John Kerry, a decorated Navy veteran criticized by Republicans for his anti-war activities during the Vietnam era, lashed out at George W. Bush on Monday for failing to prove whether he fulfilled his commitment to the National Guard during the same period. Conservative critics have questioned whether Kerry deserved his 3 Purple Hearts for battle wounds, an issue the Democratic candidate sought to put to rest last week by releasing his military records. On Sunday, a top Bush advisor criticized Kerry for leading anti-war protests after he returned from the battlefield. Kerry's direct criticism of Bush's guard record reflected an aggressive strategy to challenge the president. It came as Dick Cheney used a speech in Missouri to question Kerry's fitness to be commander-in-chief. A nearly 3-year fight over privacy in White House policymaking is going before the Supreme Court today. Justices will be asked by the Bush administration to let it keep private the records of Vice President Dick Cheney's work on a national energy strategy. The Bush administration finds a last hope in a dispute that began in July 2001 when a government watchdog group sued Cheney over the group's private meetings. The Bush administration has lost 2 rounds in federal court. If the Supreme Court makes it 3, Cheney could have to reveal potentially embarrassing records just in time for the presidential election. More news after this.
Our national parks have always been there for us, standing as silent reminders of who we are and what it means to be an American. They are full of history, of memories, of majesty. But now these great American treasures need our help. I'm Richard Dreyfuss, asking you to help preserve America's national parks. Visit AmericansForNationalParks.org today, because there's just too much to lose.
This is a public service announcement from Americans for National Parks and this radio station.
A Mexican man who got drunk, fell asleep on railroad tracks, and was run over by a train, slept through the entire episode and escaped unharmed, local officials said on Friday. George Lozano Lopez did not regain consciousness until well after paramedics arrived on the scene late Wednesday night. The train's driver spotted Lopez on the tracks and frantically blew the whistle, but was unable to rouse him or stop the train in time. The undercarriage passed within just a few inches of his body, but did not touch him. For Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
A promotional letter from a Hummer dealer excitedly made this pitch. Allow me to introduce you to a fabulous opportunity. A tax loophole so big you could drive a Hummer H2 through it. I'm afraid he was not exaggerating. Tucked way down in the arcane language of one of George W.'s tax cuts for the rich was a provision that allows businesses to deduct up to $100,000 from their income taxes for the full cost of big SUVs. At a time when the federal deficit is bloating, at a time when we should be cutting back on the gluttonous consumption of foreign oil, at a time when pollution from cars is amassing a record level of the carbon dioxide gas that causes global warming, Washington has gouged a loophole into our tax laws that actively encourages people to avoid paying a big chunk of their taxes by buying the biggest, hoggiest gas guzzlers and pollution machines that exist in the entire auto kingdom. Bush's loophole literally requires buyers to go for the huge, most luxurious tanks on the road, Hummers, Range Rovers, Navigators, etc. The deduction only applies to vehicles weighing 6,000 pounds or more. Forget your zippy roadsters, your perky hybrids, your family sedans, your humble pickup trucks. To qualify for this tax break, your road machine has to be bigger than big. How big? Even the Ford Explorer or the Chevy Suburban does not qualify. An accountant tells of a client who was going to buy an Explorer, but by moving way up in price and weight to the yacht-like Lincoln Navigator, he was able to slip through Bush's loophole and save $20,000, meaning he got the bigger one for about the same as the Explorer would have cost, courtesy of us taxpayers. This is Jim Hightower saying, why should we be giving tax incentives to rich people so they can drive a glorified hog for their latte runs? To help shut down this loophole, call Taxpayers for Common Sense, 1-800-TAXPAYER.
I'll just see who that is then.
Oh no! South American killer bees! They're going for my eye!
A swarm of killer bees. That's one thing you don't want in your house. One thing you do want in your house is a better-looking roof with Plitanium plywood from Georgia Pacific. Other roof sheathing materials can swell at the edges, creating an unsightly checkerboard pattern under your shingles. Plitanium roofs provide a more uniform surface. Plitanium plywood. Build it better.
While you can't see brilliant colors on the radio, you can use them in your business. That's why the Xerox WorkCenter M24 digital color copier printer is attractive to anyone who listens to the voice of reason. The lease price is a low $189 a month. You get brilliant Xerox color for less than 9 cents a page, plus the Xerox Total Satisfaction Guarantee. To get all the colors you can't see on the radio, do the most reasonable thing.
Call 1-800-ASK-XEROX for business lease details. Additional per copy charge.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. A time to restore democracy. America faces its greatest threat since the Civil War. The worst fears of the founders are being realized as powerful corporate interests have taken over our culture and representative government. We, the people, now face a fundamental choice. Take back our country, or do nothing and become victims of tyranny and empire. That's the copy from the back of a new book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America, by me. And I want to give away a copy to the person who can call and answer correctly the following question. And this is for a free copy of We the People. How many additional barrels of gasoline? And keep in mind, it takes, you know, a couple of barrels of oil to make a barrel of gasoline. How many additional barrels of gasoline do we burn in the United States every day because SUVs and light trucks are exempt from the CAFE standards, the average mileage standards, and... Well, let's phrase it this way. If everybody in America drove a car that got the average gas mileage of the average automobile, versus all these SUVs and light trucks on the market, how much additional gasoline, how many barrels of gasoline are we burning because we have all these SUVs and light trucks? The thing with SUVs is fast. I remember back, this was... a decade ago, I was running a company in Atlanta, And our bookkeeper called. It was toward the end of the year, the end of the accounting year. And he said you've got some profit here in the company. He said you've got to buy. And this is, we were about to move to Vermont, and we had bought this house. We had a half mile long dirt road driveway, and so I was thinking of getting a four wheel drive vehicle anyway. We used to have a four wheel drive Subaru, which was just great. And, but anyhow, he said you've got to buy something that weighs more than 6,000 pounds, because if you do that, then we can wipe out this $17,000 profit. You won't have to pay taxes on it. You can, and now, back then it was $17,000. Now it's $100,000, the tax deduction, if you buy a Hummer or another vehicle that weighs more than 6,000 pounds. So here's the question, and so I'm somewhat embarrassed to admit that we went out and we bought a Land Rover, and after 2 years, this was nuts. You know, got 7 miles to the gallon, traded it in on a Honda Insight, which got 77 miles to a gallon, and boy, was that a nice change. Anyhow, how many more barrels of gasoline do we burn per day due to SUVs and light trucks in the United States? Is it 100,000 barrels? Not gallons, barrels. I believe it's 55 gallons to the barrel. 100,000 barrels? Is it 300,000 barrels? Or is it 1.2 million barrels? 100,000, 300,000, or 1.2 million? Call 1-866-889-8894. And the first person with the right answer, we will send a free copy of We the People, A Call to Take Back America. 1-866-889-8894, the telephone number. 100,000 extra barrels of gasoline do we burn every year, or every day, excuse me, in America because of SUVs and light trucks and their exemptions from CAFE standards? 300,000 or 1.2 million? A, B, and C. So that's our question. Dick Cheney is moving to Missouri today, attacking John Kerry's, well, that was yesterday, attacking John Kerry's record on defense. And let's just take a look here. One of the questions that really kind of pops me is, what right does Dick Cheney have to question John Kerry on defense? As John McCain has pointed out, and as Chuck Hagel has pointed out, two Republicans in the Senate, you can go back over an 18-year-old voting record, and you can find people who have voted on. You can characterize their voting record any way you want. You say, well, he voted against a defense bill. Well, maybe that bill was going to be reintroduced later with something else, or maybe that, whatever. Oh, we have a winner, by the way. You can stop calling right now. We have a winner. So the Bush ads attacking Kerry's voting record, first of all, are disingenuous, bordering on just plain old flat-out lies. I mean, for example, the one that, because he voted against the $87 billion, knowing that it was going to pass, but as a protest vote because it didn't include any way to pay for it. See, we borrowed that $87 billion from our children, and Kerry said, why don't we reduce the Bush tax cut by $87 billion and pay for it that way? And anyhow, they're laying that down as if it's three different things. We have a caller on the line. Carolyn in Santa Fe has apparently won our contest. Carolyn, how many barrels of gasoline do we burn per day due to SUVs and light trucks? 100,000, 300,000, or 1.2 million barrels of gasoline a day?
1.2 million barrels a day.
You're right. Here's the Jason Mark of the UCS, University of California, UCS. I'm not sure what the Clean Vehicles Program Director said. We burn 1.2 million more barrels of gasoline per day because SUVs and light trucks are less efficient than cars. That's about twice as much oil as we import from Iraq, or three quarters of what we import from Saudi Arabia. The average light truck on the road burns over 40% more gasoline than the average car. U.S. cars and trucks emit more heat-trapping carbon dioxide annually than most other countries emit from all sources combined. Higher light truck sales only worsened global warming. 2001 was officially the second warmest year on record. Did you already pass along your address so we can send the book to you?
Yes, I did.
Okay, great. Carolyn, congratulations.
Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to reading your book.
I'm looking forward to sending it to you. Thanks for calling.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So, this is pretty, pretty mind-boggling when you think about it. Here we have this $100,000 tax break that we are offering to people to buy SUVs. You wonder why there's all these SUVs on the road, why there's all these commercials for SUVs. $100,000 tax break. If you buy an SUV, if you buy a vehicle that weighs over 6,000 pounds, see, under 6,000 pounds, it's called a car. And you can only deduct $2,000 or $3,000 a year. You can depreciate it over the, 4 or 5 years, and that's it. But if it's over 6,000 pounds, this is a tax break that was put into place originally for farmers. So that if a farmer buys a tractor or a combine or some piece of heavy equipment, and also for companies that have, dump trucks, delivery trucks, FedEx, UPS, their vehicles depreciate at a different rate than a normal car, and they cost a lot more. And so, to encourage them to make investments in equipment, farmers and businesses that use these kind of vehicles, we say, we'll give you a tax break. And they just kind of arbitrarily set the limit at 6,000 pounds. And back then, the only vehicle, and this was, maybe 15 years ago when it first started, the only vehicle that weighed over 6,000 pounds was the Land Rover. I mean, it was Chevy Suburbans then kind of crept up to 6,000. It was interesting. When we bought that Land Rover, the guy who sold it to me made a big point about the fact that it weighed 6,017 pounds, 17 pounds over. And, they know the game that they're playing. And so now this tax break has gone all the way up to $100,000. And it would be so easy to simply say, if it's a passenger vehicle, it doesn't qualify. We're still going to give a tax break to farmers. We're still going to give a tax break to small businesses that want to upgrade their fleet, want to do things like this. But no, we haven't done that. This is the General Insanity Department, the General Insanity Department. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to call in today. Roberta in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Roberta.
Hey, Tom.
Welcome back from the slammer.
That was, thank you for the tribute. I'm a little embarrassed to call now because I've blown my cover.
You are our hero, so what's up?
Well, you're the only communicaster I can even listen to, let alone call, without having my blood pressure shoot off the scale. So I thank you for your courage and your rational thinking. I wanted to ask, I owned a Toyota hardtop Land Cruiser, and I bought it before the SUV thing, but I hated the low gas mileage. I did roll it, and so I'm never going to buy another one. Not for that reason.
Well, that's the other problem with the SUVs is that they have such a high center of gravity.
Heavy.
Yeah, they have such a high center of gravity, they roll real easily. Yeah,
I didn't get a scratch, but
that's great.
Anyway, I wanted to suggest the possibility of mass transit, even to rural areas, that could curb the corporate profitizing. I know in Minneapolis, long ago when Hubert Humphrey became mayor, Isidore Blumenfeld was his real name, the Jewish mafia in Minneapolis, had a lot to do with getting rid of mass transit. And
it wasn't just that. I mean, back in the 30s, maybe the 20s, the Firestone and General Motors conspired and eventually were convicted in court of the crime of conspiracy to buy up the public transit system of the city of Los Angeles. And they bought it on the premise that they were going to privatize it. They were going to run it more efficiently than the city could run it. Mm-hmm. And so the city, they sold the city this whole bill of goods. We'll do great with it. The city sold them, and Los Angeles at that point had a very sophisticated mass transit system. You can still see little remnants of it along Santa Monica Boulevard. Sometimes you drive over these unused railroad tracks. But it was huge, and it was all over the city, and it worked very, very well. And once they bought it, they tore it up and threw it away. And because it didn't make profits for the tire companies and for the auto company.
Well, I can remember the streetcars, which were non-polluting in Minneapolis. When I was a little girl, my grandmother used to take me for rides on the streetcars. And it was so romantic. They still have the cable cars in San Francisco. They've maintained them. But I don't know. I just want to put in a plug for, I know it's probably an impossible dream, but I like taking on impossible missions. I think they are possible.
Yeah, and we do, I agree.
You know,
we do need more mass transit.
Streetcars come back, non-polluting. Aren't they doing that in Canada?
Yeah, and they're doing it all. I mean, you know, in Europe,
Germany?
it's been all over Europe. It's free. You can get anywhere, you know, on the trains in Europe. It's just really quite remarkable.
Wouldn't that be a wonderful solution? I think it would.
Yeah, it's and it's not rocket science. And yet you have this administration now trying to cut Amtrak's budget, which is our foot in the door
of
mass transit, and cutting back funds to cities for mass transit. I mean, it's just absolutely mind-boggling.
Well, this has been creeping so long for us. I mean, it's time
And then we wonder why we're in Iraq. I mean, more oil than we would import from Iraq would be saved if people just didn't, you know, if people just drove cars instead of SUVs.
That's mind-boggling.
And yet, you know, we're willing to sacrifice 700 of our young men and women on the altar of this oil. Well, Roberta, thanks for calling. You're leading a dangerous life there. Been in the slammer, rolling cars over. Take care.
I'm an adventurist.
There you go.
Hard
okay.
To kill.
Take care. Thanks for the call. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. 20 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do they know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
During the past 3 years, it's true George W. Bush has created more jobs. Unfortunately, they were created in places like China. Bush's policies have encouraged the loss of nearly 3 million jobs. He supported tax breaks to corporations that ship jobs overseas. George W. Bush is taking our country in the wrong direction. It's time to make America work for every American.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system. system, which was the Arrakis Digilink system. I paid $15,000 for it, but this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the ToonTracker system is rock solid, and the price, only $349.95 for the Pro version with traffic interface, and only $149.95 for the original ToonTracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.toontrackersystems.com. www.toontrackersystems.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I took a walk in the rain one day on the wrong side of the tracks. I stood on the rail till I saw that train just to see how my heart would react. Now some people say that you shouldn't tempt fate, and for them I cannot disagree. Fate should not tempt me.
There you go. I've never learned nothing from playing it safe.
Yes, indeed.
It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Welcome back. 25 minutes after the hour. Fate shouldn't tempt me. Yeah, I take my chances every chance I get. Well, what a great song. Dick Cheney received four separate 2S student deferments. I want to tell you about this in just a moment. First, though, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to be on the program. Storm in the Shawnee National Forest near Carbondale, Illinois is online. Must be listening on WINI there, eh?
Hey, Tom.
Hey, Storm. What's up?
Well, Tom, I've been listening to talk radio for years and years and years. And your callers are, without question, the most informed and insightful and entertaining callers of any program I've ever heard.
Well, thank you, Storm. You now number yourself among them.
Well, I don't know if I enjoy that that title, but your last caller, Roberta, for example, I have a question about her and then some information for her.
Yeah.
Was she in the slammer because she was caught in a no-speech zone or what?
She was in the slammer because back 20-some-odd years ago, she was protesting, or maybe 30 years ago, she was protesting against nuclear weapons, and she had climbed into a nuclear facility along with a bunch of people from the peace movement and gotten arrested, and she spent 30 days in solitary confinement.
Wow, well, good for her.
Yeah.
She was fighting against a nuke plant?
Yeah, it was. It had something to do with nuclear weapons. I don't recall the details. She told
us. Oh, well, I was fighting against a nuke plant in Clinton, Illinois, several years ago. Then my comment. What was my comment about Roberta? Oh, my news for Roberta. The trolley cars. I just heard on National Public Radio over the weekend that New Orleans is reinstalling trolley cars.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
And they're part of the streetcar named Desire, right? It will now go down to Desire Street.
Absolutely. So. And the first thing you're going to do is surround the French Quarter, border the French Quarter, and then they're going to go throughout the entire city with trolley cars.
That's great. That will not only save energy, it'll also, if they do it right, like, you know, San Francisco did with the cable car, it'll add a lot of charm to the city.
Absolutely, for tourism and so forth. And they also said that other cities are planning the same operation. I think that's just terrific.
Yeah, I agree. Well, thanks for the info, Storm.
Thank you, Tom.
Okay, thanks for calling. Always great to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Brian in Grand Rapids is on the line. Hey, Brian, what's up?
Hey, not too much. I happened to be in the waiting room the other day and picked up a Reader's Digest there from January, and there was an interview with Condoleezza Rice in there.
Oh, my. Okay.
And, of course, they didn't ask her anything too important in there, but one thing they asked her at the end of the article was whether she will run for office after the Bush administration is done.
Well, that's an interesting question. How did she answer?
She said, "There's nothing I am worse at than long-term planning. I have never run my life that way."
And she hasn't run the war that way either.
I believe that serendipity or fate or divine intervention has led me to a series of wholly implausible steps in my life, and I've been open to those twists and turns because I don't have a long-term plan.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a sweet way to live your life, and I actually, I suppose, at many points in my life, have shared that philosophy, but if you're going to organize the invasion of another country, you better have a long-term plan. That's remarkable. Thanks for sharing that with us, Brian.
You bet.
Well, you know, yeah, I suppose we should cut her some slack and say, you know, that was her personal philosophy, and it probably doesn't have to do with it. But the evidence certainly seems to be, you know, where is the Bush plan? We're going to stay the course. What course? What course? Well, he's now adopted Kerry's program of let's bring in the UN. But, you know, is that the course he's going to stay? I mean, that's not the course that he was staying 3 months ago. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 29 minutes past the hour.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. Unable to get all of the countries of Latin America to sign on to the Free Trade Area of the Americas, or FTAA, proposal, the Bush administration has been approaching countries individually, offering World Bank loans and other economic incentives to developing countries in order to win acceptance for privatization and the weakening of laws protecting public health and safety. The latest country targeted is Panama, and negotiations with Colombia are set to begin next month.
2 weeks remain before some 100,000 service and support workers with SBC Communications hit the picket lines, and signs point to the company and Communications Workers of America preparing for the worst. The contract between SBC and the CWA expired last month, and federal mediation has not gotten the two any closer to agreement on rules protecting jobs from outsourcing and affordable health coverage. The union's arguing its side via advertisements on radio stations and in newspapers around the country. On the other hand, SBC is training non-union staff to handle maintenance and repair jobs. Billing managers are in crash courses on line installation and warns 12-hour shifts, including weekends, will be the rule in the event of a walkout.
Could the graveyard shift be coming to German retail workers? With the German economy suffering from years of stagnation and high unemployment, Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder hopes to boost spending and employment by allowing stores to stay open 24 hours a day. A similar move last year, extending Saturday store hours, didn't show a marked increase in sales, and German labor unions are opposing the changes because they said last year's extension of store hours actually eliminated jobs by further squeezing profits at smaller shops located outside city centers.
Trading provisions involving workers' rights in Europe in order to find consensus on a continental constitution. The United Kingdom says it won't sign one unless it gets an exemption from the European Union's working time directive, which caps the work week at 48 hours. Germany has now agreed to support British amnesty on this issue, so long as the British back a German push for stronger regulations dealing with corporate social responsibility. Whether the rest of the Union will consent to this deal remains to be seen, but Germany and the UK do represent the two largest economies in Europe.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to new research conducted by the Center for Women in Work at Rutgers University, wage depression will continue to create a downward economic trend unless Congress makes policy changes promoting prosperity. Researchers found that high wages and good benefits support a middle-class lifestyle and the ability to purchase consumer goods. The researchers suggest raising the federal minimum wage above the current $5.15 per hour as a start in getting the economy back on track.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This
is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Riding around in my Hummer, I never feel insecure. Everybody knows just where I stand on blood and guts and gore. And since I have to buy more gas every 10 miles or so, I sure am glad we got Iraqi oil to keep me on the go.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman with you, 26 minutes before the hour. And Dave in Humboldt County has called 1-866-889-8894. Dave, welcome to the program.
Do you write those tunes, or do you find them somewhere?
Oh, we've got actually Brad Walrod, a friend of ours in New York City, finds most of our music and sends it to us. Occasionally, listeners will send us little clips.
Well, they're great, but yeah. I'm thinking you expose us to so much reality that we might otherwise not get. I'm wondering if you would be willing to periodically pose just a couple of questions. I got so many, but just bring up two of them. One, why, when we learned almost immediately that the first jet had been hijacked on 9/11, why did we not scramble jets from nearby air bases where they could have been upcircling that first jet 10 minutes before it hit anything?
Well, this is the question that I wish the 9/11 Commission would ask somebody.
I think it's at least got to be being asked.
Yeah, and maybe they have. Maybe they have in private session. I mean, you know, one of the more, kind of stuff happens theories that I've heard is that there was a simulation going on that morning of a hijacking. And therefore, a lot of the people in the military thought that this, when the hijacking happened, it was the simulation. But, you know, who knows? I mean, that might be a cover story.
I think we, the public, need to be asking that. And the other one, Tim Russett had the gall to pose the other day, and that was, why, when all aircraft in the U.S. were grounded, why was several permitted dispatched to fly around the country picking up members of the Arab Al-Qaeda family and departing for Arabia when everything else was grounded? Who gave that order and why? I think the question needs to be asked. We don't, you know, just so that we're thinking, because it leads to some frightful insights to me.
I agree, Dave. I agree. And these are questions we need to... If
you could be posing them every once in a while, and maybe somebody will answer them for you.
Yeah, I will continue to pose them. I will do that, and we will see about the answers. But I would like to see John Kerry posing these questions.
I got more. Thank you, and do stay with us.
Okay. Thanks, Dave. I appreciate the call. Good to hear from you. So yesterday, Dick Cheney rips into John Kerry for not being worthy of being commander-in-chief because his commitment to defense is weak. Well, let's look at the timeline here. Cheney, during the Vietnam War, received four separate 2S student deferments. These were deferments that you could get if you were in college. He attended Yale, then he dropped out, and it looked like he was going to get eligible for the draft, so he returned to Yale. Then he dropped out again in 1962. Then the draft board found out, and so in 63 he entered Casper Community College, then moved on to the University of Wyoming. It took him 6 years to get his undergraduate degree. You know, little bits and pieces, just enough to maintain just enough to stay ahead of the draft board. Finally, when he finishes that, he decides to stay in school and get a master's degree to maintain his deferment. But then, interestingly, on October 26, 1965, the Selective Service Administration lifts the ban against drafting childless married men. And oddly, on January 19th, what's that, October, November, December, January, 2.5 months later, he receives his 3A deferment, a brand new kind of deferment for having a pregnant wife. Now, the timeline on this is fascinating. You know, not to knock people for having kids, and certainly, you know, the Cheneys in all probability wanted to have a child, but the Cheneys' first child was born. This is from the Washington Post. The Cheneys' first child was born 9 months and 2 days after childless men were deemed eligible for the draft. 9 months and 2 days. Slate.com notes, dedicated students of obstetrics will observe that Elizabeth Cheney's birth date falls precisely 9 months and 2 days after the Selective Service publicly revoked its policy of not drafting childless husbands. This would seem to indicate that the Cheneys, though doubtless planning to have children sometime, were seized with an untamable passion the moment Dick Cheney became vulnerable to the Vietnam draft. When asked about this, about why he didn't serve in Vietnam, he simply said, "I had more important things to do." Dick Cheney yesterday said, "It is irresponsible to vote against vital support for the United States military and repeatedly call for major reductions or outright cancellations of many of our most important weapon systems." Irresponsible, he says. Well, let's see what he said as Secretary of Defense on April 30th of 1990. He said, and I quote, "We have to get on with the business of cutting. We have to cut out those things we don't need. We have to cut out those things we can do without in the military area that we can do without in terms of the complex that is the Department of Defense. Over the course of the last year, since I've been secretary, I've recommended terminating, canceling, and shutting down 20 separate weapons programs." He also said, "The F-14B, of course, were terminating in 1990. There's no new money for it in 91. The AHIP, the Phoenix missile, the F-15 aircraft, etc., all of those are being terminated. The Apache helicopter, of course, ends in 91. The M-1 tank, we're proposing to shut down the M-1 tank production lines in 91. Secretary of Defense Dick Cheney, February 1st, 1990. Same day, he said, "Since I became secretary, we've been through a fairly major process of reducing the defense budget. We've cut almost $65 billion out of the five-year defense program, and we'll take another $167 billion out. We're recommending base closures. We're talking about force stricture cuts. We've got a military construction freeze." In 1991, the New York Times reported, Defense Secretary Cheney, quote, "tried to reduce active duty troop strength from 2.2 million to 1.6 million while making deep cuts in the reserves and National Guard." End quote. And on December 16th of 84, U.S. Congressman Dick Cheney said, "If President Reagan doesn't really cut defense, he becomes the number one special pleader in town. The president has to reach out and take a whack at everything to be credible, meaning you've got to hit defense." Okay, those, the statements and behaviors of Dick Cheney, and then yesterday, speaking of John Kerry, he had the audacity to say, "It is irresponsible to vote against vital support for the United States military and repeatedly call for major reductions or outright cancellations of many of our most important weapon systems," when he himself had called for terminating the F-15, the Phoenix missile, the Apache helicopter, the M-1 tank, and on and on. Did you catch this story? This in Prosser, Washington. This is eventually a 15-year-old kid. 15-year-old kid in art class makes, you know, the kids are saying, "Yeah, draw something," right? It's art class. Draw something. So he draws a picture of George W. Bush's head on a stick. And another picture, he draws a George Bush, he puts horns on him, and has his finger pushing the button to launch a missile. The art teacher told the school officials about it. They called the police. The police called the Secret Service. And the Secret Service showed up to question this 15-year-old boy for drawing pictures of the president with horns on them. The school district, the Associated Press notes, has taken disciplinary action but refused to say what it was. Disciplinary action against the child. Anyhow, as John Kerry is getting these attacks, see, the point that I made just before we went to the end of the last hour, it's worth making again. In fact, I want to make it again. I had this conversation this morning with a friend of mine who runs one of the news websites out there. And he was saying, you know, Kerry's moving to the center, and, you know, we need to get people out voting for, you know, trying to push him back to the left. And, you know, he's abandoning his base. And I said, you know, this is the Goldwater strategy. to try and make to try and force Cheney to I'm sorry to try and force John Kerry to stay as liberal as he has been in the past is what Barry Goldwater tried to do. He tried to stay as conservative as he had been in the past, and he lost terribly. Because the reality is that the middle part of America doesn't want left or right. They want somebody in the middle. So George W. Bush, who had this incredible conservative voting record and behavior record as governor of Texas, statements on the record and whatnot, nobody doubted where he stood on the issues. He was a right-wing extremist. But during the election of 2000, he moved to the center. He started talking about being compassionate. He started talking about we shouldn't be foreign interventionists. We don't want to get into nation building. And all the people at the Project for a New American Century just kind of grit their teeth. And he didn't go on and on about, you know, we have to make abortion illegal and we need to get Supreme Court justices on the court who will restrict individual liberty. No, he didn't. He hid all that stuff. He moved to the center. And those people who understood politics, the conservatives who understood politics, because they had been through it with Barry Goldwater, said, okay, we're going to let him move to the center for the election because we know when he's elected, he will once again become George Bush. And I think it's crazy for progressives and liberals to say, John Kerry, he's moving to the center. Oh, my God, we've got to go out and vote for Ralph Nader. Or let's hold his feet to the fire. Yes, I know there's a legitimate argument out there that Howard Dean ignited lots of passion and, yeah, sure. But it was the base. It wasn't middle America. It really wasn't. Yes, it was a lot of people. But I just, you know, let him do what he has to do to get elected and then trust him to do well. If he really does have the voting record that everybody says he does, I think we can trust him to be a good and competent president. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Your thoughts on this. Tim in Grand Rapids is on the line. Hey, Tim, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm great. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Second-time caller. Business you did about the actual distribution of these tax cuts and how they got redistributed to middle and lower income people through state and local levies.
Right.
Do you have somewhere I can get a hold of that to counter my conservative friends here in West Michigan?
Yeah, that the actual what I was reading to you, and I should have credited it, was from the workingforchange.com website. And it was a piece written by Sean Gonzalez, S-E-A-N, G-O-N-S-A-L-V-E-S, the Cape Cod Times. I think it also appeared on commondreams.org. You might want to look there. And it was called How to Skin a Rabbit. And I'm sure if you just put How to Skin a Rabbit in quotes and then Gonzalez, G-O-N-S-A-L-V-E-S, into Google, it'll pop up. But it was on the Working for Change website. You're welcome.
I got one other comment, if I could.
Sure.
You seem to be making an impact here in West Michigan. I've talked to people about your show, and they start to listen. They think you're very intelligent and have got it together. But the one comment I constantly hear has to do with, when are we going to start talking about John Kerry's ideas and how they're going to be much better than George Bush's instead of just Bush bashing?
Yeah, that's a good. That's a legitimate concern, and I take it. And in fact, why don't we do that? Thanks, Tim. Let me dig out John Kerry's speech here, because he did have some good suggestions in there. I appreciate the call. And let's get into this, in fact. It's a good point. It really is, and it's one I need to do more. So here we have John Kerry, his remarks prepared for yesterday. And he says he has put out what he calls his contract with America's middle class. And I mentioned this before. He talks about what he's going to do. He says his first priority is to strengthen America's defense. And he says, you know, as president, I will never hesitate to use American power to defend our interests anywhere in the world. I will stand up for our country, our flag, and our values, and make it clear that the first definition of patriotism is keeping faith with those who wore the uniform of our country. He said, but what this administration doesn't understand is that to win this war, We must make America, we must make the world respect America's other sources of strength. Our economic engine, our ideals, and our profound purpose to be the last best hope of Earth. So I would say that the first thing that I see in John Kerry is idealism. I mean, we've seen this ever since he was young, you know, and came back from Vietnam and put his ideals ahead of what it might have been expedient. The second priority, he says in my contract with middle class, is this: I will put the economy and government back in line with our values. Now, notice he's not saying I'm going to create jobs. I mean, he says I'm going to create jobs, but it's not just, you know, like George Bush. Well, George Bush actually says he's going to put America in line with his values, too. He's going to cut taxes on the rich. He's going to prevent there being an increase in the minimum wage. He's going to fight attempts at unionization, George Bush. So what's John Kerry going to do? He's going to do the opposite of those things. The middle class is the moral and economic backbone of this nation, he said. Franklin Roosevelt realized that, and he set in motion programs that help people go to college, buy a house, and build their wealth. The country prospered. We created nearly 11 million new jobs, and ownership increased by 13% from 1950 to 1960. He talks about how Clinton did the same thing, and how his plan will do the same thing. And goes through some of the details of it. I'll get into a few more of those right after the break. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 10 minutes before the hour. Thanks for that, Tim. That was a good one.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value. Absolutely free, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available at bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely, because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order 2 bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get 2 bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Heat waves are one of the deadliest of all natural disasters. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Last summer, a major heat wave baked Europe for 2 weeks. When it was over, about 35,000 people were dead. Researchers who study natural disasters say that's an enormous number of fatalities, but high death tolls from heat waves are not new. Most years, heat waves and related droughts outrank hurricanes, tornadoes, and floods as the single largest weather-related cause of death around the world. Olga Wilhelmi studies natural disasters at the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado. She says heat waves are much less dramatic than other natural disasters, and that could be why they don't capture much public attention.
Heat waves are not as destructive, for example, as hurricanes or tornadoes. So a lot of people don't associate heat as life-threatening situations.
Wilhelmi says heat waves can cause the body to lose vital fluids and minerals, and that can lead to serious health conditions. For example, the inability to regulate body temperature can cause heat stroke and heat exhaustion.
Heat stroke becomes life-threatening when body temperature rises about 104, 105 degrees Fahrenheit. A step before heat stroke is a heat exhaustion, and the symptoms of both heat exhaustion and heat stroke develop very quickly.
Wilhelmi says heat waves are particularly hard on elderly people and very young children. She says they also threaten people who are socially isolated or have pre-existing medical conditions. Many of those who died in Europe last summer were elderly people who lived alone and lacked the mobility to leave their hot homes for cooler places. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
What's in a boom boom? Something good comes along. What's in a boom boom? Everything's not going wrong. Well, you get weary.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman with you, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Once in a blue moon, something good comes along. Once every couple of years, you know, you have the choice of who you're going to vote for. I suppose that qualifies. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Armin in Florida is on the line. Hey, Armin, what's up?
Hey, Tom. A good point, I think, for people that want to discover what the truth really is about the conservative agenda would simply look at here in Florida what has happened since Jeb, the crime family member down here, was installed in office. And if you look, I think the state budget, Tom, a little over 4 years ago was about $35 or $36 billion, and I think they've increased it 60%, and we do not have an income tax. I think if you further investigate, you'll see that probably 80% of the working class in Florida makes less than $30,000 a year. So most people are just stagnating or eroding here in Florida, and there's the chosen few that they transfer the majority of the wealth to. The conservatives at the top have done very well.
Yeah, I mean, it's the story of Texas as well. It's, you know, the
very regressive
country.
We have more fees on our cell phone bills. I wonder if it's a French because everything's fee, fee, fee.
There you go. Thanks a lot, Armin. It's good to hear from you, and good comment. John Kerry, just to wrap this up, he says he's going to offer a tax credit of $4,000 per year per family in college tuition, which is nice. I mean, you want to educate your kids. You want to get them going. He says, if when I put forward a new idea, I'm going to tell you how I'm going to pay for it. He said, the responsibility must begin in Washington, not end there. When I came to the Senate in 1985, the federal deficit was soaring, as it is today. I stood up to others in my party to join reformers like Warren Rudman and Fritz Hollings to push for a deficit reduction plan with real teeth. In 1993 and again in 1997, I joined President Clinton to put the nation's house in order and balance the budget for the first time since Vietnam. Because now our budget is a mess again, and we must fix it to keep our country strong. My plan will end corporate welfare. as we know it. There's a program I'll vote for. When I put forward a new idea, he says, I'll tell you how I'm going to pay for it. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, Integrity and Passion in Broadcasting Truth. 2 minutes before the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. U.S. troops backed by helicopter gunships battled with insurgents overnight near the holy Shiite city of Najaf, killing 43 gunmen and destroying an anti-aircraft system belonging to the insurgents. The fighting began Monday night and lasted several hours, a military spokesman said. It came as around 200 U.S. forces made their first deployment inside Najaf, moving into a base that Spanish troops are vacating about 3 miles from Holy Shrines, near where an anti-American Shiite Muslim cleric is holed up. U.S. commanders have said they will not move against the shrines in order to capture cleric Muqtada al-Sadr, whose armed supporters have launched attacks against the U.S.-led forces. John Kerry, a decorated Navy veteran criticized by Republicans for his anti-war activities during the Vietnam era, lashed out at George W. Bush on Monday for failing to prove whether he fulfilled his commitment to the National Guard during the same period. Conservative critics have questioned whether Curry deserved his 3 Purple Hearts for battle wounds, an issue the Democratic candidate sought to put to rest last week by releasing his military records. On Sunday, a top Bush advisor criticized Curry for leading anti-war protests after he returned from the battlefield. Curry's direct criticism of Bush's guard record reflected an aggressive strategy to challenge the president. It came as Dick Cheney used a speech in Missouri to question Curry's fitness to be commander-in-chief. A nearly 3-year fight over privacy in White House policymaking is going before the Supreme Court today. Justices will be asked by the Bush administration to let it keep private the records of Vice President Dick Cheney's work on a national energy strategy. The Bush administration finds a last hope in a dispute that began in July 2001 when a government watchdog group sued Cheney over the group's private meetings. The Bush administration has lost 2 rounds in federal court. If the Supreme Court makes it 3, Cheney could have to reveal potentially embarrassing records just in time for the presidential election. More news after this.
Our national parks have always been there for us, standing as silent reminders of who we are and what it means to be an American. They are full of history, of memories, of majesty. But now these great American treasures need our help. I'm Richard Dreyfuss, asking you to help preserve America's national parks. Visit AmericansForNationalParks.org today, because there's just too much to lose.
This is a public service announcement from Americans for National Parks and this radio station.
A Mexican man who got drunk, fell asleep on railroad tracks, and was run over by a train, slept through the entire episode and escaped unharmed, local officials said on Friday. George Lozano Lopez did not regain consciousness until well after paramedics arrived on the scene late Wednesday night. The train's driver spotted Lopez on the tracks and frantically blew the whistle, but was unable to rouse him or stop the train in time. The undercarriage passed within just a few inches of his body, but did not touch him. For Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
My, my. The Tiger can be a testy cat, can he? ExxonMobil, the largest, most polluting conglomerate on the globe, has long used its Tiger logo to promote its gasoline, urging you to put a tiger in your tank. But now, the Tiger wants to put you in the tank, attempting to jail anyone who dares to protest ExxonMobil's polluting ways. This giant is quick to dish disrespect on environmentalists. But when enviros fight back, the Exxon Tiger has a hissy fit and goes skittering to the police and courts to protect it from good old American democracy. The Tiger recently turned fraidy cat after Greenpeace and other environmental groups began to confront its multimillion-dollar campaign of deceit and distortions on the issue of global warming. ExxonMobil has waged corporate war against any hint that global warming is a problem. It paid shady scientists to write reports debunking climate change. It ran ads asserting that those who want to stop the emissions are anti-growth quacks. It sent a secret memo to George W. demanding that he get rid of an international climate control expert who was not towing the corporate line, which Bush did. So, Greenpeace launched a worldwide boycott and showed up at corporate headquarters in Dallas dressed in tiger costumes, declaring the place a global warming crime scene. Showing no sense of humor or propriety, the corporation called in the cops to pepper spray, arrest, and lock up the peaceful protesters, charging them with organized criminal activity. Then the Tiger dashed to court, getting a compliant Texas judge to impose an injunction against any Greenpeace actions at any of Exxon's facilities anywhere in the USA. An unprecedented, iron-fisted corporate and judicial assault on America's right to peaceful protest. This is Jim Hightower saying, by this logic, ExxonMobil would have opposed the Boston Tea Party. To battle the bully, go to don'tbuyexxonmobil.org.
Only one army believes it can win a war. Playing children's games. Please support Salvation Army summer camps and youth programs. To donate, call 1-800-SALARMY. Or donate online at 1-800-SALARMY.org. We can't win the war without you.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. There's a deep mystery surrounding Dick Cheney's energy task force, writes Paul Krugman in the New York Times today. He notes the real mystery. By the way, our number, 866-889-8894, if you'd like to call in. It's the third hour of the program. Pretty much anything you want to talk about. He says the real mystery is why the Bush administration is engaged in a three-year fight, which reaches the Supreme Court today, to hide the details of a story whose broad outline we already know. And this is a fascinating question. I want to just share with you some of Krugman's thoughts on it and some of mine. First, let's take a call, though, from John in Shreveport, Louisiana, 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Howdy, sir. I would like to donate $1,000 to the Kerry campaign if within the next 15 seconds you can name me the three cities specifically mentioned in the Emancipation Proclamation that were allowed to keep their slaves.
I don't have a clue.
You don't have a clue?
Do you?
Yes, I do. Okay. Do you know that there were cities allowed to keep their slaves in the Emancipation Proclamation?
John, number one, I'm not sure what this is relevant to, but two, no, I've never read the Emancipation Proclamation.
Okay, now see, that's what you've just said is the exact relevancy. You know, how can we say where we are, what we are, and where we're going if we don't know where we've been?
Yeah, I don't disagree. That's why I talk about history on here all the time. And the Emancipation Proclamation was one part of the history of the Civil War. And I know the history of the Civil War is something that a lot of people are very passionate about.
Let me ask you this.
Okay.
How many slave owners do you think there were in America at that time?
I honestly don't know.
350,000.
Okay.
Okay, now here's the obvious question. Why would an army of 800,000 men fight so that 300,000 people who are not in the service, rich people mostly, could keep their slaves? Why would they do that, do you think?
Well, John, I lived in the South for 18 years, and I grew up in the North, and I know that the way that history is taught in the schools in those two parts of the country about the Civil War is rather different. And, you know, growing up in Michigan, I had learned that the Civil War was about slavery, and that was pretty much it. Let me just finish here, John.
Okay.
And then when my kids were going to school in Georgia, you know, they were learning that the Civil War was really about economics, and that it was about the oppression of the North, and that it was basically about the North being this industrial state and the South being an agricultural state, and the cultural divide getting wider and wider, and the South rebelling at the exploitation of the South by the bankers of the North, and all these things that were they were all very real, and they kind of downplayed the slavery part of it. And I, to the extent that I have studied Civil War history, it seems to me that they're all right.
Okay, let me ask you this. You know, I'll have you know that what they learned in Georgia is correct.
That's what I said. I'm not disagreeing with it at all. And there was, you know, slavery was also an issue in all this. I mean, you can't get away from that.
Let me ask you this. Okay, that's fine.
Although I do know that, you know, Abraham Lincoln in the Lincoln-Douglas debate said, "I don't intend to do away with slavery."
How about some of the other quotes he said in the...
Oh, there's a whole bunch of them. I've got them in two of my books. I have quotes from Lincoln wherein he was saying that he thought slavery was an okay institution. He thought blacks should never be allowed to intermarry with whites. You know, Lincoln said those things before he became president. He changed his mind while he was president during the Civil War. And frankly, I don't think that his changing of his mind during the Civil War was a change of convenience. I think that... I don't know if you've ever read the story of when he met Harriet Beecher Stowe.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with that?
Let me ask you this. John,
your turn. Are you familiar with the story of when Abraham Lincoln met Harriet Beecher Stowe?
No, but I am about his meeting with Frederick Douglass.
Okay, well, another one who I think influenced him. But with Stowe, I mean, he had read Uncle Tom's Cabin, which came out in 1846, as I recall, or 1847, and some people say, you know, it was one of the things that really riled up, particularly the North, about slavery. And Lincoln hadn't read it until he was president. And in the second year of his presidency, he met her, and he shook her hand, and he said, "So you're the little lady who started this war." And I think he was very sincere. The book changed his worldview, and he became friends with Frederick Douglass over time.
Yeah. Okay. Well, see, here's the thing about that. If that was in 1862, the Emancipation Proclamation took effect January 1st of 1863.
Right.
Why is it the North freed no slaves in the areas they controlled then?
I don't know. I
think that's worth examining before you make a statement saying that Lincoln had changed his mind. Because, see, the very book, Uncle Tom's Cabin, is a vicious piece of anti-Southern propaganda.
Well, that's
it is not based upon fact.
That's certainly how it was viewed. It's certainly how it was viewed in the South. Absolutely. John, what's the point of all this? You called here. I'm assuming that you have some agenda. What's the point that you want to make?
Here's exactly my agenda. I'm tired of people like me who are too poor to be Republicans and too conservative to be Democrats being so mislabeled by media elites who think they know better and label us based upon a false and misrepresentative version of history.
Okay.
That's exactly what it is. Now, the fact that you can't even quote the three cities exempted, and you had never even read the Emancipation Proclamation, how do you even know to make such an authoritative claim?
Well, I don't recall that I've ever talked about the Emancipation Proclamation. It happened long before I was born.
Then the obvious question, if I was to ask you to name five documents that are the truly historic in American history, wouldn't that be one of them?
I don't know. You know, I frankly don't. The Emancipation Proclamation happened after the war was already happening. And you know, yeah, it was a significant document. I would say probably more significant were the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments.
Okay, let's
and I have
13th,
read those.
14th and 15th Amendment, for example.
But my, you know, I'm sorry, John, I'm not going to turn the show into, you know, 20 minutes on slavery in the South.
Let me send you a piece of information that might enlighten you. Can you give me at least off the air mailing address?
Sure, I would be pleased to. Let me put you on hold, and we'll take that. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Let's see, 13 minutes past the hour. 1-866-889-8894. Mark in Switzerland is on the line, calling from Europe.
Yeah.
Hey, Mark. Where in Switzerland?
Just in Geneva.
Uh-huh. Welcome to the program. I take it you're listening on the internet.
Yeah, and actually, I just realized I must have been listening to a rebroadcast because I got a comment about the Dick Cheney comment.
Oh, well, what happens is, you know, when stuff gets streamed over the web, it gets delayed. So the web stream sometimes is running 4 and 5 minutes behind the program. So that's probably the click that you heard. But I'm assuming you're listening on RadioPower.org?
That's right. Yeah.
It's a live stream. So what's up, Mark?
Well, you guys are doing a great job, and I'm so glad that there's some people left in America that think, you know, are realistic about things. But I just got a comment about Dick Cheney. He said something about John Kerry not being fit or something like that. Is that what I heard? Is that correct?
Yes. I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but the essence of it was that he's not fit to be commander-in-chief.
But that's so funny. I mean, do you ever wonder? I mean, I hear, I guess I'm a bit biased. I'm a U.S. citizen, but, you know, there's that saying, America, love it or leave it. Well, let's leave it at that. But anyway, in the French press and even in Europe, there's an article about Dick Cheney being wanted for criminal investigations in Europe, and that's why he can't even go to France.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it's a bribery investigation in Nigeria. From when he was head of Halliburton. It hasn't gotten any play at all in the mainstream press here in the United States.
That is just so amazing. I mean, I really wish that there was some fair and balanced reporting over there like they have here. I'm so glad that here at least we get a clear view of what's going on in the world.
Here being Switzerland.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, in Europe in general, I mean, it's, you know, I'm a U.S. citizen and I'm a veteran. Well, not a real veteran because, I mean, I served in the first Gulf War, but, you know, and that's not much of a war compared to this one. But still, I used to be really proud of being an American and stuff. But it's so difficult here now because people are just attacking left and right because of Bush. You know, everybody thinks he's an idiot.
Well, Mark, those of us who are still here and are still working are trying to bring back the respect that America once had. I lived in Europe for a year back in the 80s, and I know at that time actually America was largely respected. Although it was during, as I recall, it was during the Reagan administration. There was a lot of people scratching their heads, you know, about this guy. I think it's possible for America to regain its status in the world. And the way that we have to do it is to restate our values. To say, you know, once again, the United States is committed to democracy. The United States is committed to social justice. The United States is committed to being a good citizen of the world. You know, we're not some, you know, cowboy nation that just, you know, comes in with guns blazing if things don't quite look right, and acting like a hyper-reactive, hyperactive, you know, paranoid child. You know,
you're right. I can't agree more. I moved out here during the Clinton administration. Back then, things were just great, you know. I mean, everybody was like, wow, an American. And, you know, it's easy to get a job out here if you're an American. So, I mean, it's a lot easier, I think, than getting a job back in the States. And it's such a shame.
Yeah, I do a lot of speaking in Europe. And about 5 or 6 months ago, I gave a speech at Oxford University in England. Yeah. And, you know, 160, I think, students, a little less than 200 students were in the room. And you know, a few professors and whatnot. And before I got four sentences into what I was saying, I was challenged about whether or not I supported Bush and the war in Iraq. And I had to, you know, and my talk was not about that topic. I mean, my talk was about corporate personhood and the status of corporations as persons in the United Kingdom and in the United States. And I was speaking mostly to students of the law and mostly law students. I had to say, you know, I'm sorry, I don't support George Bush. I didn't vote for George Bush. And then at that point, they were like, okay, we'll sit here and listen to you. But they, you know, I felt like, you know, these kids were ready to run me out of the room. You know, it's just because I said I was an American. And I don't remember that happening in Europe in the nearly 30 years that I've been, you know, regularly traveling to various parts of the world. There's been an absolute radical change in the last couple of years, and it's very unfortunate. Mark, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
I appreciate your kind comments. Keep up the good work, and keep being a good symbol in Switzerland of America and what Americans are and what Americans can be. The real mystery of the Bush administration is, as according to Paul Krugman, and this is I think a real significant question, is why. Why has Dick Cheney gone to the Supreme Court to hide his Energy Task Force meetings? I mean, why do so when in reality we probably already know or have inferred much of what is there? You know, that he was meeting with industry fat cats, that they wrote the energy policy of the United States, that they wrote into that energy policy of the United States $18 billion in corporate welfare for themselves, that they wrote into their provisions that would gut the environment and would increase their profitability, that would, you know, be more profits for them, more costs for you and me, both in terms of health and taxes and whatnot. That, you know, we kind of know all this stuff. So why would he go all the way to the Supreme Court to hide it? And Krugman has one theory. I have another. I want to share both of them with you right after this break. But I think it's a fascinating question to ask. And it's going to be particularly interesting to see how Mr. Scalia votes on this thing. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 20 minutes past the hour. You're listening to The Pill That Will Help You Escape the Matrix.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about the Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
when I think about getting older. It's not dying I worry about, it's living and being buried under a pile of medical bills I can't pay for.
Healthcare costs are soaring. Millions more Americans are uninsured, and those who have coverage are paying more out of pocket. Yet President Bush offers no plan to curb costs, and his new Medicare law would actually ban the government from negotiating lower prices from drug companies.
The cost of these drugs, it's very scary.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he Nureyev? Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Carlo Baggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Bit of a sad song there. The real mystery of the Bush administration, why have they engaged in a three-year fight to keep secret the fact that to keep secret who was in on and what happened at the Cheney Energy Task Force meetings? Now, the two groups that are suing, Judicial Watch, the conservative group that also had sued President Clinton in the, I believe it was the Jennifer Flowers case. Maybe it was that other woman whose name is escaping me at the moment, which then ultimately led to Monica Lewinsky. Larry Klayman of Judicial Watch is the one group that is suing, and the other group is the Sierra Club. An unlikely alliance. Some would say an unholy alliance. But they're suing, for basically the same reason. It's our money. It's our government. If you guys are going to make policy for we the people, if you're going to sit down in a room and decide what the future of America is going to be, then you have to share with us the process that led to that. I mean, it's just very simple. The most significant of all the commons in America, the thing that we all collectively own, is the government itself. And if you are going, as part of the government, are going to be making decisions about how we're going to conduct our lives and what the quality of our lives is going to be like and what the quality of our air is going to be like and what the prices are going to be that we pay for things and what if we're going to subsidize corporate behavior and how so and to what extent. If you're going to be making those decisions, we have a right to know who's involved, what they have to say, and why. And Cheney says, no, you don't. You don't have that right. Cheney claims he has the absolute right to secrecy. And Paul Krugman really spins this as kind of a very dark thing. He says basically, well, here's how he wraps up. He says, what Mr. Cheney is defending, in other words, is a doctrine that makes the United States a sort of elected dictatorship. A system in which the president, once in office, can do whatever he likes and isn't obliged to consult or inform either Congress or the public. See, they're not just keeping the stuff secret from you and me. They're keeping it secret from members of Congress as well. He says, not long ago, I would have thought it inconceivable the Supreme Court would endorse such doctrine, but I would also have thought it inconceivable that a president would propound such a vision in the first place. Well, I think that there is some truth to what Krugman says, that there is this extraordinary thirst for power in the executive branch. But I think the larger issue, or the probably the more accurate one, is one that has Karl Rove, you know, is giving Karl Rove fits. And this, you know, the 2000 election, the electricity crisis in California was the thing that started, or that was kind of the trigger for the energy meetings. And, you know, we've all known that the energy companies were manipulating the price of energy in California and the supplies of energy and basically, you know, sticking it to the Californians and enriching themselves. But the story hasn't really made national press. And the reason why is because the mainstream national press haven't had the actual documentation, the smoking gun. And I'm guessing that Cheney's trying to keep this hidden because he doesn't mind if it's out on the Internet and people like me are talking about it, but he doesn't want the New York Times writing about it. And if this comes out, we will discover how severely both California and the rest of the nation have been and are being manipulated by these major corporate donors to the Bush-Cheney campaign and to the Republican Party. How terribly badly the government of the United States and the resources of the United States are being exploited and manipulated by a very small number of extremely powerful corporations. And I frankly think that that's it. That they're concerned about the light of publicity shining into the dark places of this administration. It's Tom Hartman, 29 minutes past the hour.
Issue, middle-class tax cuts. John Kerry voted to eliminate the marriage penalty and for a child tax credit. Kerry's economic plan? Roll back tax cuts for the wealthiest 1%, helping pay for a middle-class tax cut. Don't reward corporations that export jobs overseas. George Bush, he supported tax breaks for exporting jobs, and he raided Social Security to pay for a tax cut for millionaires. Bush's priorities won't strengthen America.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. Unable to get all of the countries of Latin America to sign on to the Free Trade Area of the Americas, or FTAA, proposal, the Bush administration has been approaching countries individually, offering World Bank loans and other economic incentives to developing countries in order to win acceptance for privatization and the weakening of laws protecting public health and safety. The latest country targeted is Panama, and negotiations with Colombia are set to begin next month.
2 weeks remain before some 100,000 service and support workers with SBC Communications hit the picket lines, and signs point to the company and Communications Workers of America preparing for the worst. The contract between SBC and the CWA expired last month, and federal mediation has not gotten the two any closer to agreement on rules protecting jobs from outsourcing and affordable health coverage. The union's arguing its side via advertisements on radio stations and in newspapers around the country. On the other hand, SBC is training non-union staff to handle maintenance and repair jobs. Billing managers are in crash courses on line installation and warns 12-hour shifts, including weekends, will be the rule in the event of a walkout.
Could the graveyard shift be coming to German retail workers? With the German economy suffering from years of stagnation and high unemployment, Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder hopes to boost spending and employment by allowing stores to stay open 24 hours a day. A similar move last year, extending Saturday store hours, didn't show a marked increase in sales, and German labor unions are opposing the changes because they said last year's extension of store hours actually eliminated jobs by further squeezing profits at smaller shops located outside city centers.
Trading provisions involving workers' rights in Europe in order to find consensus on a continental constitution. The United Kingdom says it won't sign one unless it gets an exemption from the European Union's Working Time Directive, which caps the work week at 48 hours. Germany has now agreed to support British amnesty on this issue so long as the British back a German push for stronger regulations dealing with corporate social responsibility. Whether the rest of the Union will consent to this deal remains to be seen, but Germany and the UK do represent the two largest economies in Europe.
here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to new research conducted by the Center for Women in Work at Rutgers University, wage depression will continue to create a downward economic trend unless Congress makes policy changes promoting prosperity. Researchers found that high wages and good benefits support a middle-class lifestyle and the ability to purchase consumer goods. The researchers suggest raising the federal minimum wage above the current $5.15 per hour as a start in getting the economy back on track.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, there's two. That's two trains running. Well, ain't now one going my way.
And welcome back. 26 minutes before the hour. Drug card confusion. The Medicare bill had a very deft little bit of politics here. We're not going to actually give people the Medicare benefit until 2006 because it is not much of a benefit. And we don't want them to know that. So over the short term, we're going to cut a deal with industry where we're going to give them big subsidies. And they, in turn, are going to have the authorization to give drug discount cards to people. But people have to pick the particular company and a particular card, and there's 71 of them that have been authorized. And it sounded like a good idea, I think, to the conservatives when they were putting this thing together. You know, people will love this. They'll get a card. They'll think they're getting a discount. And the drug companies, interestingly, ever since the bill was passed, over the last year, have been rapidly increasing the prices on some of the most popular drugs so that they can reduce those prices with the discount cards back down to what they were at a year ago. And this has been well documented in, you know, on this program and in other places. And next month is when, you know, seniors who are eligible for Medicare are supposed to sign up for these things. And a lot of confusion. The White House had spent millions of dollars. As I recall, it was $10 million of your money and mine in television ads promoting these new drug discount cards and saying everything's wonderful, everything's fine. Although the General Accounting Office said that the ads were, quote, misleading, end quote. That didn't stop the administration from taking our money and running them. But now we've got the Bush administration is just it's really quite remarkable what's going on here. A busload of seniors coming back from Canada in October, last October, got stopped and thoroughly searched. The intimidation movement, which FDA officials note is not consistent with past practice, came at the very same time the White House and pharmaceutical industry were working to remove provisions from the new Medicare law that would have formally provided seniors access to lower-priced medicines from abroad. It was just as they were organizing this thing in Congress to make it against the law for seniors to go to Canada or other countries to get their medicine, the Customs Service starts cracking down on busloads of seniors coming across the border from Canada. Details of the administration, this is the Center for American Progress, details of the administration's heavy-handed tactics only emerged this month after Senator Mark Dayton, Democrat of Minnesota, demanded answers in a letter to the FDA, an agency whose complicity with the drug industry has come into question since the Bush administration took office. And now comes Rudy Giuliani, the guy that I've been predicting Bush would dump Cheney for. We'll see. I still think it's possible. In fact, I still think it's probable. A lot's probably going to depend on whether Scalia is the 5-4 tie-breaking vote to keep Cheney's energy policy stuff secret. And I predict he will be.
which is why he refused to recuse himself. If this wasn't a big deal that he didn't care about, he would have said, okay, the appearance of impropriety, that's what the law says, that's what the policy is, we shouldn't do that, I agree, I'm going to back off. But now we've got Giuliani signing up. In 2000, when he was thinking about running for the Senate in New York, over $100,000 from executives in the drug industry. Boom, right in his pocket. And now he's being bankrolled to use his credentials to claim that cheaper drugs from Canada are unsafe. Look out, folks. You've noticed when you go to Canada, here I am in Vermont. Canada is an hour and a half from me. And it's easy to get up there from time to time. We go up and we'll go visit Montreal or whatever. It's a beautiful place. I prefer Vermont, but, Montreal's marvelous. And Quebec. And, of course, you drive across the border and there's all those dead people by the road. Right? I mean, you're driving along the streets and you see people walking along in downtown Montreal and all of a sudden they just grab their chests and fall over. I'm sure you've seen this on television. You walk into a restaurant, every 10, 15 minutes somebody's gasping, choking, and falling over on the floor dead. The hospitals are just backed up. You can't get into a hospital in Canada because the emergency rooms are so full of people having bad drug reactions. The public schools are a mess. Kids are coming to school. They take medicine for, ear infections or whatever, and they're dying in the classrooms. They're having to turn the closets into morgues. Oh, you hadn't noticed that? Well, Rudy Giuliani would like you to know that that's the case. Sure enough, America's mayor. You got no proof that Canadian drugs are unsafe. In fact, the FDA itself says it can guarantee a safe reimportation system for just $54 million. That's a fraction of the billions. It takes $1,000 million to make a billion. For $54 million, the FDA can actually double-check all the drugs coming from Canada instead of not negotiating with drug companies and giving billions of Medicare dollars to the pharmaceutical companies. But those pharmaceutical companies are going to take some of those billions and give them to Uncle Rudy. Old Rudy Giuliani, America's mayor, he calls himself. So that he can warn us about how dangerous drugs are from Canada. And then reporters came to him and said, well, okay, that's really nice that you're concerned about us. It's really nice that you want people to know that, if you go to Montreal or Vancouver or Saskatchewan or Saskatoon or whatever, you're going to see people just falling over dead in the streets from drug reactions, and the hospitals are overflowing with people dying from drug reactions, and the schools are shut. It's great that you want people. By the way, how much is pharma, the drug company lobby, paying you, Rudy? How much are they putting in your pocket to tell us about this, to warn us about the dangers of these drugs from Canada? Rudy says, well, I don't think I want to tell you that. No, he doesn't want to tell you that. He's refusing to tell reporters how much pharma pays his company for his services. At the same time, the Bush administration is still refusing to tell Congress what was the deal with coming up with these cooked books in order to push this legislation through to hand billions of dollars off to the drug companies and the private hospital companies, such as owned by Bill Frist's family. Henry Waxman last month invoked the seven-member rule, whereby administrations traditionally release documents if seven members of an oversight panel request them. This goes back, decades, maybe a century. It's like that's the kind of the threshold. When seven members of an oversight panel say, hey, we'd really like to look at this. This is the source of the information that Congress used to make a decision, after all.
please share with us. Share with Congress. You can even do it in secret. Just please share with Congress how you came up with these numbers that we use to make decisions based on. And what does the White House say? Nope, sorry, we're not going to tell you. You don't have a right to know. Well, actually, they're not even saying you don't have a right to know, because they know that Congress does have a right to know. Congress now is going to sue the Bush administration. You know, sometimes I think that the best thing that could happen, and this is absolutely bizarre, and please don't vote based on this comment, but sometimes I think that the best thing that could happen would be if the House and Senate went Democratic and George Bush got reelected president. Because then you would have a Congress that could actually start holding investigations, and you'd have the guy still around, which would make the investigations relevant, because once he's gone, nobody's going to go back and investigate stuff that was done in the previous administration. Because there is so much corruption in this administration that deserves to see the light of day. Just so much corruption. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. The sweetheart deals, the in bed with the drug company. You know, there's this thing with Scully and Foster, for example. This really needs to be played out. This really needs to be, you know, the American public needs to know about this. And we're not being told that the guy who was the head administrator of Medicare had just left his job when the Bush administration came in, left his job as the head of the for-profit hospital association that helped make Bill Frist rich, headed up Medicare, wrote this law that's going to make the drug companies rich, and then left, got a special exemption, and left to go back to work for the drug and hospital industry. I mean, you know, why would somebody give up a $675,000 a year salary to go work as a civil servant? 1-866-889-8894. Jeff in Denver's on the line. You got any thoughts on that, Jeff?
Well, actually, my thought is basically on dealing with Supreme Court justices who... Is there a mechanism in place for, such as impeachment for Supreme Court justices? Because they're supposed to be in there for life.
Yeah, they are in there for life. And, yes, there is a mechanism for impeachment. And, I don't know the details of it other than that it's very similar to impeachment of the president. There has to be a bill of impeachment asserted in the House of Representatives. The House of Representatives has to vote to impeach, and then there's a trial held in the Senate. And members of the Supreme Court can be subject to that as well. And as I recall, there have been one or two efforts in the history of the United States to do that. None of them have gone anywhere.
Well, you know, there's... The executive branch is constantly being sued by citizens to enforce laws and such. I was wondering if there's a possibility that things can be done that way, you know, to sue the court or sue members of the court.
I don't believe, you know, I don't know. I'm not a legal scholar in that area. It's not, you know, well, I'm not a legal scholar in general. I'm a reporter. But I don't know, Jeff. Good question.
It would be an interesting one to take a look at.
It would be one for you to call your elected official, your senator's office or your congressman's office and ask them.
Okay.
And or on Friday when Bernie Sanders is on the show, call in and ask him.
That's a good idea.
Because odds are I won't remember. I'm sorry. My ADD kicks in whenever I get on the air here. But, you know, call back when Bernie's on the line and ask him. He may know. He would probably know. Okay. Thanks a lot, Jeff. Good to hear from
Thanks,
you.
Thanks, Tom. Take care.
Yep. Okay, Governor Tim Pawlenty, Republican of Minnesota, last week used his state's pension fund holdings to sponsor a Pfizer shareholder resolution that would force... Now, this is actually kind of cool. This from a Republican governor. See, do you get it? I mean, to a large extent, this crosses party lines because it has to do with who's getting harmed here. Governor Tim Pawlenty of Minnesota last week used his state pension fund holdings to sponsor, as a stockholder, right, to sponsor a Pfizer shareholder resolution that would force the drug industry giant to only raise prices at the rate of inflation. Now, this is a report from David Sirota at the Center for American Progress. In response, Pfizer CEO Henry McKinnell, a top Bush fundraiser, claimed to, quote, sympathize with financially strapped patients, but vowed to continue efforts to cut off supplies, end quote, of drugs to Canadian pharmacies that sell to U.S. customers. Another Pfizer vice president claimed that the drug price problem was not exorbitant. It's not exorbitant prices in the United States. It is that the French and Germans and Canadians are not paying their fair share. Yeah. These guys love the free market until somebody says, let's have competition. It's... What he did not mention is that the drug industry is by far the most profitable in America. You thought the defense industry was profitable. The drug industry makes them look like pikers. And that a minor reduction in drug prices here would do little to reduce those profits. As a new Boston University study shows, because lower prices and drug reimportation would allow more people to buy drugs who don't buy them now, industry profits and R&D funding could actually rise. Now, that's an interesting one. People would be buying more drugs because, you know, a lot of people right now, they get prescriptions, they're sick, they're on medication, but they're on Social Security, they're on a fixed income, they don't have so much money, they're the working poor, and so they don't buy the drugs. They don't have the money. They can't afford a $100 prescription. Well, if it became a $20 prescription, maybe they could afford it. The drug companies are suddenly getting business they didn't have. Possibility. Possibility. Congressmen are now demanding a full accounting of the emergency money. This is fascinating. On the heels of the reports the president diverted $700 million into Iraq invasion planning without informing Congress, Robert Byrd and David Obey pressed the White House on Monday for a full accounting of how the Bush administration had spent $40 billion in emergency money that was provided by Congress just days after the 9/11 attacks. $40 billion! What'd you guys do with it? Byrd and Obey said, contrary to the requirements of law, there appear to have been no consultation with Congress on how $20 billion specifically handed over to the administration has been distributed. And they have not submitted required quarterly reports on the use of the entire $40 billion for almost a year. Give these guys $40 billion. And what happened? Who knows? Where to go? I don't know. Be interesting to know, wouldn't it? It's the Tom Hartman Program, 10 minutes before the hour.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Oil and natural gas prices are near record highs, but much of it is going to waste. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Consumers are feeling the bite of rising energy prices at the gas pump and in their monthly utility bills. Some experts say the higher prices might have a silver lining that could force people to conserve. Randy Udall directs the Community Office for Resource Efficiency in Aspen, Colorado. Udall says more than half of the energy we consume goes to waste.
55% of the energy used in the United States is wasted. That is, we waste more energy than we put to productive use. For one example, in the power generation electric utility sector, about two-thirds of all the energy that flows into that sector is wasted, comes out as waste heat and not as electricity.
Udall says we squander even more in our automobiles.
About 80% of the energy that flows into the transportation sector of the U.S. economy is wasted. So we're going to need to drill a lot more wells and to produce more energy, but the largest single challenge we face is making American buildings and automobiles much more energy efficient than they are today. And the good news is we know how to do that. It's not rocket science. There's lots of ways that we can do that. We've made some progress over the past two or three decades. There's just a lot more work to do. And as soon as we get serious about it, I'm confident that we'll make enormous headway.
Udall says we're going to have no choice. The economies of China, India, and other developing countries are rapidly growing, driving up world demand for oil. Udall says we can't afford to waste it. For more information about this story or others you hear on Earthwatch Radio, visit our website at ewradio.org. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
She looked me over and I guess she thought I was all right. All right in the sort of a limited way for an off night. She said, don't I know you from
and welcome back. 4 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman program. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast and all around the planet. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Mark from South Jersey's on the line. Hey, Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me. I always enjoy your show. I always like listening to your subjects. And with all the things you've been talking about energy, and I can't help but think the cost of this war, what it would have cost to retrofit our country in a hydrogen mold.
Oh, it's, you know, when you consider, you know, the 150 to nearly $200 billion that we have spent on this thing and committed to into the next year. I mean, you know, there was $80 billion up, getting up to it, and then $80 billion, $87 billion on top of that, and then, you know, now they're talking about another $50 to $70 billion. That is an absolutely extraordinary amount of money, and what that amount of money could do in the United States. When Carter was jump-starting, and he really did, was jump-starting the solar and alternative energy industry, they were talking about, you know, tax credits and tax breaks and things that added up to millions, tens of millions, maybe a few hundred million, not even $1 billion.
Right.
Not even $1 billion.
Well, the cost money-wise and the cost lives-wise, American lives, I just think that, you know, everybody could have made money. It could have been a good thing for everyone.
Oh, it could have been. I mean, the thing that we have to keep reminding people is that the war in Iraq was an optional war. It was a war of choice on the part of George W. Bush. And it was a war that it clearly he was committed to from the first minute that he came into office. He thought he mistakenly thought it was going to somehow stabilize the Middle East. I believe he really thought that. I think he was really that naive. He wanted to finish his daddy's business and show that he was the real man's man. He wanted the oil from the region. He's an oil man, after all.
Only been one reason to stabilize that Middle East.
Yeah, right. And, you know, to get the oil. And
right.
and I think perhaps the most important, him and Karl Rove figured that if he was a war president, if he could go on TV and say, I'm a war president, that meant that it was a slam dunk for his reelection. And that, you know, that the mistake that his father made was wrapping up the war in Kuwait too early. Because if his father had stretched that war out for just another month or two, he probably would have gotten reelected. And that actually is the case.
Sure. So, thanks, Tom.
Anyhow, Mark, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Thanks today to Louise for producing the show, to Brad Walrod for finding and editing our music, Shelby at RadioPower.org, and Ben at White Rose Society. For the archives there, and Mike Toth for the archives on our website. Thanks to our sponsors. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. And thanks to you for listening. We'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.